I want to taper off the military aid within the next 10 years.
You want to taper it off to zero within 10 years?
Yes.
That would be a very dramatic shift.
Well, it's in the works.
So I talked to Bibi just a few minutes ago, and I said, what would you like me to say? He said, Israel's not going to live this way anymore. They're not going to live under threat from Iran anymore.
Netanyahu went on Fox to eulogize Graham and said, don't worry, we don't need your money anymore. We have a new plan. Yeah, to merge with our military and say you co-own all of our weapon systems and the $1 trillion of U.S. weapon sales every year.
The last conversation I had with him, I said, Lindsay, we've come of age. We have a robust economy. We can take care of our
own. We run your Congress now. And
financing our own weapons for the defense of Israel and defense of our common interests with America. So I'm going to phase out the support, the military support for Israel over a period of years and bring it down to zero. We can do it. And he went ballistic. He said, no way, you can't do that, because he was so concerned with our security, which he believed was your security, that he actually fought the Prime Minister of Israel on keeping America's aid or actually increasing it. And that tells you what kind of a person this extraordinary friend was.
The boldness, the arrogance of this. And again, I don't want to get rid of Israel. I don't want a river to the sea. I don't support the Islamicist. But I cannot support Israel primarying our leaders.
We know why young people are, and, you know, middle-aged people are against the next war. Because we'd be the ones fighting it. They're trying to bring back the draft. Screw that. We're not going to fight. We're not going to fight some other country's wars, are we?
I cannot support Israel openly bragging they basically control our foreign policy and now want domestic control, and 38 states have passed laws that if you criticize Israel, you can't have a government contract or a state job. And if you do get a job, it's a felony in Texas and a bunch of other states. The laws vary, but 38 have the laws. I mean, this is un-American stuff.
The ambassador, who's also a Republican, said, well, you might say that America let Israel survive, but it's Jews who created America. And he goes through, you know, how much of America was based on the Torah, how the original symbol of the United States proposed by Benjamin Franklin was Moses parting the sea, that, you know, many of the original symbols of America come from the Bible. And there are many references to the Bible in the early writings of American patriots. I quote some of them in my book.
Israel gives us as much as we give them. And a lot of Americans never fully understand that.
This is social credit score stuff. When the Democrats do it, I'm against it. When the EU does it, when the UK does it, when Brazil does it, I'm against it. And I'm against it when Republicans are doing this. It's unbelievable. The Defense Authorization Act 2027. Now passed out of committee in the full House. It looks like Israel may get its merger, lifetime fusion, integration, these are all terms, marriage with the U.S. military and intelligence. They got an intelligence bill, does the same thing with Senator Cotton. Unbelievable. Will the Senate sign up this special office that merges everything from research and development right down to battlefield, right down to telemetry, and they co-own our military? Equipment and sales of it around the world, $1 trillion of it a year. Man, that is bold. And now it's passed out of both committees and is in the full House, and they got the votes.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
There is a war. It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. We are the resistance. Join us and share the links now at AlexJonesLive.com.
Do not help fund the resistance. You sit comfortably. You consume. You watch. You wait for others to fight the battle for you. The dark side has you firmly in its grasp. Every day, you remain on the sidelines. My power grows stronger. Continue believing someone else will save the galaxy. It pleases me greatly.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Nothing can stop me. The force lies within.
There is no escape from what you are becoming. Lay down your weapon or be destroyed.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. Hope you're all doing well. We got a lot of stories to cover, some breaking news about what's going on in Iran as the, I guess it's a new war now. I don't know if y'all have seen this. It's one of these great examples of the way that our bureaucracy is a little bit malleable whenever they want it to be. The Congress is supposed to declare the war. Now, there are provisions for the executive branch to do warlike actions, but they have to be contained, they have to be for a certain purpose, and they have to finish within 60 days. And at 60 days, either the Congress has to actually vote to go to war and you can continue your operation, or you have to end the operation because it's now officially a war. Well, apparently we have not been at war with Iran since April 7th. That was when the first war ended, 59 days in. Luckily, got it just under the line there. So that was over. That was the first Iran war. We won. It was amazing. 60 days. You know, done, job completed, and now it's a new war. Now this is an entirely different war with the same aims and in the same timetable. And yes, everything is exactly, it is the same war, but, you know, by saying it's a different war, now we get to do it without congressional approval. Because nothing really matters, because the laws that we have are only there so that the powerful can use them to get their way. But if they're an impediment to the elite getting their way, then they don't really matter. They don't really matter that much, actually. So yeah, we have a new Iran. We are now in the midst of the new Iran war. I guess to memorialize Lindsey Graham, you know, he really was holding blood feast. I mean, the man's like last known statement was him being like, I gotta get another war in the Middle East. I can't go to the doctor now. I've got wars to start. So maybe it's in memory of him that we're doing this, but this is absurd. Let's go now to clip number one. This is Donald Trump this morning in the White House with the Prime Minister of Iraq, talking about Iran and what's going to happen next. Let's watch.
Everything is going to work out. I think people are, the Middle East, believe it or not, is coming together. We're getting rid of the bully of the Middle East. Iran was the bully of the Middle East. They bullied Iraq. They bullied every country. There was fear all over the Middle East.
I see an example of fear in that frame. Look, I'm no body language expert, but you got the Iraqi prime minister, legs together, hands by his side, just looking down at the ground. It's just like, you know, it's just, it's always surprising. It's always a grab bag. You know, you never know what Trump's going to say. Are we bombing them to hell? We're going to destroy them. We're going to turn them all into dust. Or they're great guys and we're working with them. And the Middle East is collapsing. It's falling apart. But also everybody's coming together. pure unrelenting insanity. Here's the next part of their little discussion.
We're going to have a long-term relationship with a man that will be a great leader. You mark my words. I knew what I was doing. This man is going to be a great leader in the Middle East, beyond Iraq.
This man's going to be a great leader in the Middle East, beyond Iraq. Okay. So now it sounds like the original plan of overthrow Iran by killing the supreme leader and installing a puppet ruler, that didn't really work out. They've killed their way down the line. It was just actually reported and revealed that one person they wanted to put at the head of Iran was Ahmadinejad. If y'all remember him, a former Iranian president, is now under house arrest in Iran after the regime uncovered ties to Israel and Mossad. So for years, Israel conducted a covert operation aimed at recruiting former Iranian President Ahmadinejad as an intelligence asset and, at a later stage, even planned to install him as Iran's leader. And it shows that actually he received payments from Mossad and had met with them secretly multiple times. Pretty interesting. Maybe that didn't. So it sounds like now they're just going to try to carve up Iran. I mean, from what I just heard from Trump, him saying that this guy's going to be a great leader in Iraq, but also beyond Iraq. So it sounds like maybe they're just trying to, like, carve up Iran and they'll give a chunk of it to all of its neighbors. More desperation, more desperate dealing. When in reality, we should have never done this. But we did do it. Well, Trump did. Trump decided to get us into this, and now we're stuck. This is just our life, guys. It's so crazy. Everything is like this. It's just crazy. Literally, we're just like on the first day of the Iran war. We're sitting here like, all right, they're going to close down the Strait of Hormuz. You're not going to be able to overthrow. Like, we just called it all perfectly. And we just have to sit here for like months on end as the cat turds and the Andrew Myers and the just MAGA people just like, no, but what about that? But we're going to take their oil. And actually, this is all about China. No. And it's just like, oh my God. And we just have to sit here and we're just right. We're just dead on the money months before everybody else. And we just have to sit here and get called idiots for months on end until we are inevitably proven correct. And it's just unbelievably infuriating. And it's the same thing as COVID or anything else. We just sit here like, okay, here's how this is going to happen. A, B, C, D, E. Let's watch. And then we just have to sit here for months on end watching it unfold. It's just retarded. Let's go to clip number four here. This is Representative Tim Burchett talking about that this Iran war is never actually going to end. We're never actually going to get out of this. Let's watch.
It's not ever going to end until we get down to, we get a regime change down to somebody that we can do business with. And they're going to have to get away from the religious leaders. I think, and get a military leader to run the country.
But of course, the IRGC is in charge of the country right now because you killed the religious leaders, most of them. Again, this would all be like frustrating and like baffling. Like, this would be so baffling if it wasn't just obvious why all of this is happening, right? If you just took them at face value, took their words at face value, took their statements as truthful on the face of it, then we would be dealing with the biggest bunch of retards the world has ever seen. You cannot believe that this was on accident. You cannot believe that they're actually trying to achieve the goals they claim to be trying to achieve, because everything they do drives that goal farther away. So it would be incredibly kind of terrifying to think that all of this was happening as it's being presented, when the reality is that the people waging this war don't give a damn about America. They don't even give a damn about the world economy. They are just sort of hyper motivated to render Iran, the country of Iran, just a chaotic waste field. Then all of this makes perfect sense. And once again, I'll say again. And, you know, this is kind of similar. I don't know. Kind of, I related to like what I was talking about with Charlie Kirk, the assassination yesterday, how like you have one solid thing that you just absolutely know to be true and you build off of that. For me, it was that first video I saw of everybody turning to where the gunshot came from. And it's just like, okay, Charlie was shot from an elevated position. That's what I start with because that's what happened. And now you can build off of that. For this, it's like what we start with is the understanding that Israel wants the Greater Israel Project. And that to achieve the Greater Israel Project, they have to eliminate all rivals in the area. The only existing belligerent rival in the area is Iran. They have to destroy Iran. They have to get rid of the Iranian regime because without doing that, then they'll never have freedom of action in the Middle East. They'll never be able to achieve the Greater Israel Project. To overthrow the Iranian government, they require American boots on the ground. That has been their goal this entire time. How do we get American boots on the ground? That's all they care about because they have to get that goal. That goal is made more severe, important, necessary because of the immense and irreversible damage that the Israelis have done to their own reputation. So now taking out Iran is not just something they need to get the Greater Israel Project done. Now they've gambled so much on this. They've done so much damage to their reputation, a reputation that is necessary to uphold in order to get the foreign aid that they require to survive, that they are going to be destroyed if they don't first take out Iran. So again, all the talks of the ceasefires, all the talks of the MOU, we always said this isn't going to last. This isn't going to actually happen because Israel hasn't gotten their goal yet. They haven't achieved what they want to achieve. So this isn't going to stop. They are not trying to find a better ruler because they want Iran to thrive as a secular country. They murdered those people. They're not doing anything other than trying to render it another Syria. You know, maybe if they could get an Jolani type character there, maybe that's what they're deciding now is, can they stretch the Syrian resources enough to both invade Lebanon from the north and go after Iran? Maybe they're deciding which of those is the priority in all of this. But yeah, it seems to me like that statement of him talking about the prime minister of Iraq and saying he's going to be a great leader beyond Iraq, that's very informative to me. I'm just seeing if there's anything else about the actual war in Iran that we want to get to, because we're going to stick on this general topic for a little while, because we'll start with the Iran war and, you know, where all of this is, where all of our energy and all of this wasted effort is going. Again, I can just imagine another world. You can just imagine, like, what if Trump said no? What if he, like, Biden and Obama and Bush before him, who all were presented with his exact ultimatum from Israel, you either attack Iran or we're going to attack Iran with nukes. He's the only one that fell for it. What if he didn't? What if instead of Iran, what if instead of anti-Semitism, what if instead of all this stuff dominating our headlines every single day, monopolizing the governmental energy of America, what if we just didn't do that? What would the situation be now? Now, in July 2026, would Israel be a smoking crater? No, obviously not. So what did we gain? What did we get for this? Nothing. So we're going to continue to talk about, yes, the war in Iran, but more importantly, the takeover of America by Israel and the Jewish diaspora. And when I say Israel, you can think of the nation or you can think of the people, but Israel. So let's go to clip 23 here. This is Benjamin Netanyahu apparently threatening to use nuclear weapons. He gave this speech in Dimona, which is where the secretive Israeli nuclear stockpile is. Let's watch. He says, we are prepared for any scenario. I can tell you only one thing. And I will say this to the leaders of Iran. Do not count on it being quiet. If you attack us, do not count on a rerun, because it will not be a rerun. And that was already powerful enough. There will be a different event, much more powerful. The days when somebody hurts us and we do not strike them back twofold are over. We did this to the axis of evil in Iran and will continue to do it to anyone who harms us. That's what we do. Oh, they're so tough. Oh, the Israelis are so tough. They just failed for the third time to take over Lebanon, folks. They can't even take over Lebanon. Third time they've tried. They failed in 1985, they failed in 2006, and they failed in 2026 to take over a country the size of New Jersey that's right next door to them, hardly can keep the power on half the day. Israel can't even take over them. They're the weakest army that's ever existed. Israelis, they only, and this is something, again, if you've watched the Rise and Kill First series, I mean, it is the most pertinent thing you could possibly read to understand the situation in the Middle East, because there's a couple through lines, a couple consistencies. One of them is that they always resort to violence as the first option, the Israelis, the Jews. And it's not necessary. Like in Rise and Kill First, there's a story about a bunch of German Lutherans that moved to the Promised Land at about the same time the Israelis do, but the Germans just start orange groves, built a nice neighborhood, started like funding hospitals, provided some of the most prominent citizens of the city, integrated into the community, brought wealth and prosperity. Are you asking what happened to those Lutherans? The Israelis murdered them all. Seriously, and took their houses. It's actually where the Mossad and the Shin Bet and the Amman were headquartered for a while. I believe it's still the headquarters of the IDF, is this neighborhood where a bunch of German Lutherans were creating a thriving civilization until the Israelis decided they were all Nazis and assassinated all of them and drove the rest away. But the point of me saying this is you have actually pertinent contemporary examples of foreign populations going to Jerusalem, going to Palestine, creating communities and thriving there. And then you have the psychotic, Pale of Settlement Jewish socialist radicals show up and decide, actually, we have to murder everybody here. That's the only way we'll ever be safe. Never necessary. Totally unnecessary. And it's over and over again. The British are helping to settle the Holocaust survivors to the air, but it's not happening quite fast enough. So the Israelis kill the English people. And it's just like literally none of this was necessary. You could have just moved there. You could have just lived there. You never had to murder everyone, but they always got to go to murder. That's the only option. There's like a religious or communal allergy against settling things diplomatically. They just won't do it. It's infuriating. The other thing is that they suck. Like Mossad, Amman, Shin Bet, they fail about 90% of their missions. I might even be a little bit generous here. It never matters because they always have diplomatic cover and they've got agents in every government all over the world. So, I mean, they always get away with it. But it was another thing that you found where if their target had any awareness that they might be targeted, they could almost never kill the person. Like if the person was just like aware, like, oh, Mossad's trying to kill me, I better take some measures against that, then, they wouldn't be able to get to him. They'd blow up a house. The guy wasn't there. They'd send him a mail bomb. His secretary would open it. I mean, they're murdering just everybody all the time, but they have a really hard time killing anybody that knows they're coming. If, on the other hand, the person, it's like German Lutherans who have no idea that they're being hunted, then yeah, those succeed. They're really good at killing people who have no idea they're even in a fight or a war or being hunted at all. They're really, that's when they can carry out some really spectacular stuff. If they're throwing rocks at Israelis, then there's trouble. And there's a very interesting total, utter, and complete lack of humility at any point. Failure after failure, they never seem to notice. There's one example. There's the Lilyhammer affair, where six IDF, or, you know, Israeli assassins, think they found a Palestinian leader who's living in Norway. Turns out it's just some Moroccan dude. So six, you know, high-level Israeli assassins appear in Norway, kill a Moroccan waiter on a date with his pregnant wife. Then they, like, return the rental car that they did the assassin. They all get caught within, like, 3 hours. They get sentenced to, like, 5 years in prison because the Israeli government makes a deal with the Norway government. What do you think happens when they get back to Israel? Because what actually happened is they were given a giant parade and celebrated like they were heroes. And it's like, these guys just went to Norway and murdered a waiter. That's what they did. They failed their mission. They killed an innocent person. They embarrassed Israel completely. They probably cost you some, you know, diplomatic favors. But they're heroes. But it doesn't matter. But they're heroes. And it's great. So when you see Benjamin Netanyahu, and again, it's this like, it will be so much bigger than you have. It's like, we get it. You're a bunch of crazy psychopaths. You have nuclear weapons. You stole them from us. You sold some of the material to the Soviet Union in South Africa or wherever else. You infiltrated our scientific programs. You infiltrated our military. You betrayed us. You're traitors. We get it. You built nuclear weapons. And now if anybody doesn't give you your way, you're going to, you know, blow everybody up. We get it. You're a bunch of children with a gun. We understand. It's like, I don't know, just something about the whole, like it'll be much more powerful. It's like, we get it. Who's the bully of the Middle East? Trump's like, we're getting rid of the bully of the Middle East. Meanwhile, Netanyahu's like, maybe the next one will be even a bigger explosion. Maybe this explosion will irradiate you. And it's like, we get it. You're a bunch of petulant little bullies who aren't getting your way. So you have to murder a bunch of people in Beirut and try to set off a nuke in Iran. The reason this is really important is because it's true. They're psychopaths that will blow up the world. They will not hesitate. They do not value anything but themselves. So if themselves are targeted, if they think they're about to, they will blow up the entire world. Literally. I mean, you know the Samson option. It's not just the nukes in Dimona. It's the nukes on submarines all around the world. There's also probably nukes stashed in countries all throughout the world. If you know Israel, you know they're doing, you know, it took them 10 years to do the Apollo gold pagers to blow up Hezbollah. You don't think they are seeding nuclear weapons in, you know, European capitals? They absolutely are. They're dangerous psychopaths who are nuclear armed. And the reason I say that is because what could defeat a power like that? It ain't going to be Hezbollah. It's not even going to be Iran. It has to be America. America's the only one that could do it. We actually could, if we wanted to actually eliminate the primary threat to human existence, then we could, using our influence, using our power with Israel, we could very safely go in like a hostage situation. We are the special forces that could slip in, disarm the hostage taker before anybody else could get shot. Anybody else tries to do it, the hostage taker is going to start shooting everybody. Israel is going to start launching bombs off. America could actually deal with this issue, disarm them, and create a safer world. But it's up to us. We're the only ones that could possibly do it. But we won't, because they've infiltrated us and taken us over. We'll get to that on the other side.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. It's globalist siege. It's globalist economic warfare. It's a globalist blockade, an embargo, sanctions against American populist patriots. For everyone that's been watching and listening to me for years, you've seen the attacks. You've seen the deplatforming. You've seen the court battles, the news articles, the demonization, the bogus default judgments. We even have FBI and CIA operatives on hidden camera talking about how their entire goal was to take me out at the knees by knocking out my ability to accept payments. And that model they used on me, they admit, is for all of you.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, so we were after him.
So with Alex Jones. And the goal with him was what, just to bankrupt him?
Pretty much.
Well, because of First United payments and your support, they failed. And they failed because I had a processor with a backbone who loves America and believes in the free market. One who stands up for American justice and who didn't back down when they received threatening messages and pressure from other major institutions. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Consolidation, vertical integration, that is the goal of the BlackRock globalist system. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. This is the key to their entire panopticonic takeover plan, in their own words. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. Visit First United Payments now at FirstUnitedPayments.com. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. That's 877-899-1313. The tyrants are counting on us not to innovate. They're counting on us not to migrate to institutions and organizations that are pro-human just like us. This isn't some new company. I've been using them for almost a decade. They're already taking care of most of the patriots. Whether you're a florist, have a gas station, or you're a farmer, or you've got a little five and dime shop or a factory, whatever it is, online merchants, this is the place for you. These guys are patriots and they're in our corner. They're Americans just like us and they hate the New World Order with a passion. They believe in the free market and they understand this is 1776 2.0. 90% of his information warfare and financial, and this is just as important as the right to self-defense and guns. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Thank you so much. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live, the Alex Jones Network. AlexJonesLive.com is where you can find us. I was going to say we're back at war in Iran, but no, it's a new war. It's a whole new war. It's a whole new thing. Legally, it's got to be. I don't, you know, what do we even make of this? Yesterday, Marco Rubio came out and said, we're opening the Strait of Hormuz. No one's charging tolls. It's going to be free and open like it always was. And exactly the same time, Donald Trump was saying, actually, we're going to take a 20% cut of everything. Now, he's backed off that since then. But just an example of the type of messaging that's coming out of the Trump administration. You get exactly opposite statements on exactly the same day from two different figures. So I can't even figure, I mean, obviously we want the Strait open. We the people, we the humanity want the Strait open. But I'm not sure where we are now in that back and forth. I guess Trump is now unleashing strikes against Iran in order to keep the Strait open. Okay. So this is the latest. We are now on the side of we're keeping the Strait open, not we're the ones closing it down or we're the ones blockading it. We are now the ones opening it. Here's a report from Fox News earlier today.
Massive operations underway. CENTCOM posting brand new video of flight operations aboard the USS George H.W. Bush in the Arabian Sea. Some of this is from last night and today. And then you will see some images of the aircraft carrier itself as we enter night four now of the new ongoing punishing strikes against Iran. Some 300 strikes, U.S. strikes against Iran since July 10th. U.S. allies, including Bahrain and the UAE, have been struck. We have bases in both of those places. And then separately on the waters, on the strait, one person was killed and eight were injured aboard a commercial vessel that was struck by Iran. So this is a very, very active scene, as you can tell. All this as we count down to 4 p.m. Eastern, which is just about 44 minutes away from right now as the blockade is being reassembled. The United States reassembling the naval blockade against Iranian traffic in and out of the strait.
All right, so there you go. U.S. reimposes blockade on Iran's ports after Iranian attacks in the Strait of Hormuz. We have launched yet another wave of this war. Things seem so promising with the MOU mere weeks ago. Expecting this to be the first step in a long sought after peace. But no, Israel wouldn't leave Lebanon. So now we're back at war. Now, remember, that's what this is all about. The memorandum of understanding would have been in place, except that America was unwilling or unable to hold Israel to account for that first provision of the MOU, which said that Israel has to get out of Lebanon. If they had just done that, if they'd even just paused momentarily, we could be at peace right now. Of course, we could have been at peace if Israel hadn't tricked us into this in the first place, but this is all. We are restarting the war now. We are once again plunging the world into economic peril, which may kill billions down the line if we can't grow food. God only knows where things go next. And all of this is being done for one simple reason. So Israel can bomb Beirut. So Israel can continue their unwinnable war against a bunch of civilians to their north. That's what this is all about. That's the only thing that had to happen was Israel saying, all right, we'll pull back to where we previously were. They didn't even have to leave Lebanon fully. They didn't have to, they just had to stop bombing civilians for a little while and they just wouldn't do it. They didn't want to do it. So. Here we are in yet another endless war, courtesy of Israel. Trump says Iran investment deals will replace Hormuz fee as U.S. hits Iran in fourth night of attacks. U.S. carried out a third night of strikes against Iran after President Trump said he's reinstating the blockade of Iranian shipping. Trump said trade and investment deals with the Gulf states will replace the 20% fee for ships to pass through the Strait of Hormuz that he'd proposed a day earlier. The United Arab Emirates says at least two tankers came under Iranian fire in the Strait of Hormuz that Iran insists it has the right to control. Bahrain and Jordan say they intercepted new Iranian attacks on Tuesday as Tehran retaliates with missiles and drones across the Gulf. And U.S. Central Command just posted on X saying the military had begun launching more strikes. We can go to clip number 19 here. This is, again, Trump in the Oval Office talking about the strikes against Iran that have started up again.
Give them a chance. I wanted to give them a chance at making a deal. You know, we had a deal 2 days ago. It was done. And then all of a sudden, they couldn't do it. They didn't like something about the deal. They couldn't do it. And they shot first. And that was a big mistake that they shot first because we have been knocking the hell out of them. They're very difficult people. 47 years we put up with it. The SS Cole. You go back all the way, thousands of people, thousands of Americans were killed, a lot of soldiers were killed. A lot of soldiers are walking around or not walking around. I mean, they've been so badly injured.
U.S. forces presumed the naval blockade, resumed the naval blockade against vessels transiting end from Iranian ports and coastal areas today at 4 p.m. There are currently more than 20 U.S. Navy warships and hundreds of military aircraft operating across the Middle East. American forces remain vigilant, lethal, and ready. We are vigilant, lethal, and ready. We are at your service, Mr. Netanyahu. Whatever you need from us, we are ready and willing to use our incredible power, incredible military, incredible diplomatic gravitas so that you can continue to slaughter babies in Gaza. We are at your service, sir. Amazing. Amazing the power we can bring to bear. the incredible change we can affect the world over. By the way, our kids can't read. By the way, the whole reading thing has sort of taken a big blow in the last couple of years. Our kids, they can't read anymore, but it's fine. It's fine. It's not like you need literacy to run a globe-spanning empire or anything. It's not like while we're busy making sure that Israel has freedom of action to slaughter its neighbors, we are watching our entire nation be hollowed out from the inside by the very same people we're helping in the Middle East. Iran launches brazen attacks on more tankers in Hormuz, killing sailors after Araghchi mocks Trump's toll plan. And this is the frustrating thing about hearing Trump talk about this. Is it, you know, maybe he's just putting on the appearance for appearance's sake. But, you know, part of me thinks he actually, you know, believes the crap he says about the military, which is completely inconsistent and totally unjustifiable with the fact that they keep ending negotiations on their terms. Oh, Trump formally informs Congress of Iran war resumption. See, that's because they're supposed to vote. That's because if we're going to be in a war like we are, like because this is a war, then the Congress should vote on it and they should say that we're in war. But they're not doing that because of this little trick they pulled. Isn't that nice? They get to pull tricks like that. Like, he's like, oh, they're begging for a deal. It's like, do you not see a bit of an inconsistency when you're constantly saying they're begging for a deal one day and the very next deal you're explaining how you had a deal going, but then Iran decided to start bombing you again? It's like, it doesn't sound like they're desperate for a deal. It sounds like you've got kind of nothing that you're willing to offer them that's sufficient to stop them from fighting, and it doesn't seem like they want to stop fighting. Seems like they want to continue this for a while. They seem pretty confident is what I'm saying. They seem pretty confident in their ability to weather this storm, and actually the longer it goes on, the better their position seems to be getting. So we never should have done this. Obviously. But you know, all of this is very useful in enacting the real important program, which is to eliminate freedom here in the United States. And they're doing this despite massive upcry against it. And again, you know, we went over it yesterday, but you can go through the headlines and it's like houses are more expensive than they've ever been before. The economy is worse for the average person than it's ever been before. There's no jobs. The H-1B visa scandal is, you know, just stripping hundreds of thousands of Americans out of the middle class. The literacy rate is collapsing. I mean, it's just problem after problem after problem. And then correspondingly, our government is going to war with the ICC on behalf of Benjamin Netanyahu. We're obviously starting this new war in Iran. It's just everything our government is doing is hyper-focused on delivering everything they can to Israel while our own country is being destroyed and taken over by Israel. And so we're going to talk now about Section 224, Section 219, these attempts to fully merge the Israeli military with the American one. But it's important to first set up the backdrop of the fact that if they did, they would sacrifice their pride for a few days to stop bombing Lebanon so that we could get peace with Iran. They are willing to sell us down the river. They're willing to destroy us entirely if they think they can get any benefit from it. And listen to what I'm saying. I'm not saying that if it comes down to the choice between do you save America or do you save Israel, they'll choose Israel. That's true, of course. I'm saying that if we don't do everything that they say, they will destroy us. If we try to get them to get out of Lebanon, they'll like set nukes off. Like they're insane. They're insane people that we shouldn't be allies with, let alone have any access whatsoever to our military intelligence or technology. This is absurd beyond description. Thomas Massie, of course, has been very much on top of this. Here's what he had to say about the NDAA amendment trying to integrate the IDF with our American military.
I think what's even more concerning is in the NDAA Section 219, which is going to start commingling our military supply chains and technology with Israel's. It doesn't make sense to do that with a country of 10 million people. But they've got that in the NDAA. I'm told that's not coming up this week, but we know it's going to come up sometime, probably sometime soon. And so I've offered an amendment to strip Section 219. It was called Section 224 from that bill.
And you've had success in the past with discharge petitions to push, legislation that leadership wasn't necessarily aligned with. Do you see that in the case of these measures regarding Israel?
Well, they're going to give me a vote, so we don't have to do the discharge petition on the defunding in the State Department. As far as Section 219, I mean, that is a place where you could use a discharge petition, but you got to know that you're going to get 218 signatures, and that's rather difficult right now. We'll see how the defund vote goes.
So.
Representative Massey proposes NDAA amendment preventing integration of IDF with U.S. military. Congress Thomas Massey expressed his concerns about Section 219 in the NDAA. He said that would start commingling our military supply chains and technology with Israel's, saying these are unbelievable projects, so we invest jointly and take the fruits equally. You move from aid to partnership, and I think that represents what America is, he says. Now, Israel is, he says. Now, on the other hand, is that we share with America unbelievable intelligence to save American lives. This is Netanyahu saying this. So this is his explanation for it, which is why it doesn't really make any sense. It's like we invest jointly and we get the fruits equally. You move from aid to partnership. And I think that represents what Israel is. Now, the other thing that we share is with America is unbelievable intelligence to save American lives. Yeah, like the intelligence that if you kill Ayatollah Khomeini, Iran would fall. That was some of the intelligence they gave us. Of course, they withheld intelligence that would have helped us to prevent 9/11. But other times they have given us information like where Soleimani was, so Trump could assassinate him. Or they, gave us intelligence on, where to bomb Iran on their behalf, right? Not really so much intelligence to help us protect ourselves, but intelligence that's untrue, manipulated, and designed to get America to do what they want for them. To get America to do Israel's bidding, they do provide select and often fabricated evidence like that Saddam Hussein was developing weapons of mass destruction, that type of intelligence that they like to share with us. This is from Michael Goolsbee at Michael Goolsbee V on X. Section 219 doesn't just expand cooperation with Israel, it creates a permanent bureaucracy and a powerful executive agent reporting directly to the Secretary of War, whose statutory mission is to institutionalize ever deeper integration between the U.S. and Israeli defense establishments. Data fusion, integrated systems, and shared supply chains do more than improve cooperation. They expose operational knowledge, create long-term institutional dependencies, and make it increasingly difficult to separate America's defense enterprise from that of another nation wherever our interests diverge. In practice, the executive agent would be driven to accelerate joint technology programs, co-production, supply chain integration, information sharing, and the incorporation of Israeli origin systems onto U.S. platforms. Each decision might appear modest or even reasonable in isolation. Taken together, however, they will steadily expand foreign access to Americans' defense industrial base, emerging technologies, operational concepts, military networks, and future capabilities while reducing the United States' freedom to act independently. There will also be massive amounts of money and the powerful institutional and commercial interests that follow it invested in these joint programs. Once these constituencies exist, the pressure will be to expand integration, not to unwind it. The United States already cooperates extensively with allies around the world. What makes Section 219 unprecedented is that Congress would create a permanent Pentagon office dedicated to deepening integration with one foreign country's defense establishment. That office would exist to ask whether each new layer of integration serves America's independent interest. It would exist to find new opportunities to deepen that integration. That's what bureaucracies do. America's defense establishment should answer to one nation, advance one national interest, and serve only one sovereign, the American people. Section 219 erodes American sovereignty by progressively blurring the distinction between America's defense establishment and Israel's. For Americans and in the eyes of the world, that distinction must never be blurred. Section 219 is completely unprecedented, totally unnecessary, deeply deceptive, and has no place in American law. But I would expand beyond that, because again, I think if you look at this in a holistic bird's eye view sort of fashion, it seems like
it seems like the plan, like Israel has served its purpose up to a point, and now it's almost like it's expanding out of Israel. So as we've reported, I mean, the Israeli government is buying islands off the coast of Greece to create Israeli colonies, essentially. You also have, of course, the actual power brokers in the Jewish diaspora, the extended Israeli control structure with people like Jared Kushner trying to buy up, you know, a giant militarized island in Albania, again, to create another sort of isolated colony, but also happens to be at a strait where they could control shipping, since there's already an Israeli colony on the Boot of Israel right across the strait from the Albanian area that the Kushners are trying to take over. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about this in Argentina. Some new laws have just passed allowing foreign investors to buy up large swaths of Patagonia that happen to be damaged in wildfires while a bunch of Israeli tourists were running around doing suspicious things. We know they're crazy. So when you picture this from their point of view, and that's all I try to do, is imagine you're one of these people putting this in place. What do you really want with Section 219? It is incrementalism. It's, you know, cranking up the heat on the boiling pot of water, but not enough to get the frogs to jump out, right? They're not seizing American military, but they are integrating themselves more into it because they see America as sort of their base of operations, their military power. They see America as a colony of Israel, and they're trying to solidify and sort of officialize that fact. And all these other things that are happening at the same time are all in coordination with this merger and this takeover. So as they're creating these new offices will slowly accrue power to themselves until they are essentially the ones running the operations in total. And that means that the anti-Semitism offices, the thing we covered yesterday, the JASA, the Jewish American Safety Act, was attempting to, you know, criminalize anti-Semitism in obvious violation of the First Amendment. You have to be able to see all of these as puzzle pieces so you can see the whole image, right? I feel like a problem a lot of people have is they'll hyper-focus on, you know, Section 219, or they'll be very concerned about what's going on in Albania, or they're, you know, concerned about the free speech ramifications of the anti-Semitism bills. The thing you have to understand is if you're just looking at one of these things, all you're seeing is one little 1-by-1-inch section of a much, much larger picture that I'm trying to describe to you here, which is a global control system that will operate inside the governments of nations, but is in fact taking orders and headquartered outside of those nations in Israel. But what they're doing is they're setting up the corporate and governmental infrastructure for the classically imagined New World Order prison planet, where Israel will be the capital of the world and its agents will occupy positions of power in every nation at every level. And, you know, national borders will exist as long as they're useful, but they'll eventually be dissolved and you'll probably have something that looks almost exactly like the Brave New World, 10 kingdoms, 10 populations categorized by continents and ruled by a single centralized bureaucracy that operates out of Israel. Like, this is what they're setting up. They're doing it in a sophisticated way, but they're doing it in a universal way. Like, everything is moving in this direction. And I don't know how more people don't see it. So, you know, we'll continue to cover this and, you know, try to elucidate it. We go at least to clip number 5 here. This is Benjamin Netanyahu once again talking about Lebanon. The latest, as you saw flash across the screen there, is that Donald Trump demanded that Bibi Netanyahu withdraw from Lebanon, and Bibi Netanyahu said, no, thank you. So there we are. Here's Benjamin Netanyahu. He says, I promised we would change the face of the Middle East, and indeed we have. We changed the game in the Middle East. There's no more threat of threats. There are no more colors of terror on our borders. There are buffer zones that we created deep in the territory of neighbors surrounding Gaza and inside Gaza. surrounding Lebanon and inside Lebanon, surrounding the Golan Heights inside Syria. So just again, casually talking about the fact that, yes, they are taking over their neighbors. Yeah, they are expanding territorially. They are conquering and annexing more land. Oh, but they're creating security buffer zones. It's just the way you create a security buffer zone is you carpet bomb an area and then kill anybody that you missed. So creating a buffer zone, that's what they're doing. And we have to help them. We have to serve them. We have to do absolutely everything they need the moment they need it, or else they're going to nuke us. And we deserve it, actually, because of the Holocaust, I'm pretty sure. After all, you know, Alex Karp almost got turned into a lampshade. I don't know if you guys heard this, but hero of the world and totally not schizophrenic genius, Alex Karp, leader of Palantir. I don't know if you heard this, but he almost got turned into a lampshade, which I find extremely interesting. Because this is he's telling us something about the Holocaust that we've never heard before. Now, everybody knows that they skinned Jews alive and made lampshades out of their skin. And if you don't believe that, you go to jail in Europe, okay? So no questioning it, all right? That absolutely happened. But here's the thing. Alex Karp wasn't alive during the Holocaust. So what Alex Karp is informing us here, saying that if his family hadn't gotten out of Germany, he himself would have been a lampshade, is that the Nazis must have been running a sort of intergenerational lampshade farm. That's what Alex Karp is letting us know. Because he wasn't alive there. How do you turn somebody into a lampshade if they aren't even born? You keep their parents like cattle, and then you treat the babies like cattle, like you skin them. So, I mean, this is a big deal from the fevered paranoia of Alex Karp's retarded mind. It's very concerning. It's very, you know, you thought you'd heard the worst about the Nazis. You thought turning, you know, Alex Karp's grandparents into lampshades was the worst thing they could do. No, they were going to keep his parents alive, not turn them into lampshades until they could give birth to Alex Karp so that he could be raised and eventually turned into a lampshade. They were doing this intergenerationally, folks. Can you believe it? Because you have to. Because you'll go to jail if you don't. Okay. Palantir will send a drone to spray fentanyl-laced urine if you dare to suggest that Alex Karp's family was never in any danger of being turned into any piece of household furniture or decoration. So I say just give them full access. I say just hand over the military to these people, because they're clearly not insane and driven by imagined grievances. We'll be right back with more, and there's a lot more, folks. Stay tuned.
Jones is off the air.
There's a lot of noise right now.
Taking me off the air. It is beyond essential that you continue to spread the word about the broadcast and continue to support us.
That's usually when it matters most, to have people in your corner who don't flinch. We've been a partner of this program and of Alex's for a long time.
I'm handing out ice water in the Sahara. I mean, it is such the top rated, the biggest company, because they're the best, and he's a patriot.
We're not going anywhere, and that commitment runs to you. Here's the part that matters. With us, it's 8% when you buy and 0% when you sell. And here's something else. After you make your first purchase and become a client, if you're holding metals you bought somewhere else, bring them to us. We'll help you liquidate them. No commission. That means even if you didn't originally buy them from us, we'll still take care of you. That's not a promotion. It's not something that's for a limited time only. That's just the way we do business. Give us a call and we'll bend over backwards to help you.
Visit kepm.com/gold to get started. Or give us a call at 720-605-3900. And let us help you make room for what matters most.
Spot price of the metal in the ground. Miners haven't even touched it yet. Then they pull the metal out of the ground. They dig their tunnels. They drive it to the refinery. They melt it down, make it into a coin or a bar. That's wholesale. That's usually 3 to 5% over spot. We charge 8% on top of wholesale. When you liquidate, we charge zero.
Buy gold and silver bullion at wholesale. You can look every day what the price is. Type in what's wholesale gold and silver. And then you get it from them with a little processing fee. And then they buy it back for nothing with no cost. That's unprecedented. It's so easy. KPM.com/gold. Get a free telephone consultation, email. You can call
720-605-3900, 720-605-3900.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
What he's talking about is a trick that's being used by Netanyahu and the Zionist lobby to overcome the opposition to the U.S. spending money on Israel. You know, we gave Israel $10 billion this year and then another $13 billion on top of the $3.8 billion. It's the annual fund that we give to Israel. And so people are legitimately upset about that. And so Netanyahu came up with this idea. All right, look, we don't want any of your money. Let's merge our militaries. So in other words, he's willing to give up $3.8 billion to get a piece of $1.5 trillion.
Right.
And the whole idea is that there are two aspects to this. It will give Israel a front seat in all the technology. And to some extent, it's already had that. But it also means that it will limit oversight and will also minimize accountability. So no one will know exactly who's doing what, and it will make U.S.-Israel defense relationship deeper and less transparent. In other words, no one will know where we stop and they begin. Now, the question that the people like Massey and Kucinich and others are asking is, why do this now? What's the big rush to merge with the Israelis? After all, we just worked with them on Iran and we got our butts kicked. Their intelligence was terrible. Why would we want to merge our intelligence with theirs? And this gets to a deeper point. They're trying to protect the empire. And there's a third part to this. It's not just Israel and the United States. It's the United Kingdom. You probably remember when Trump went to London and was honored by King Charles back in September. He brought with him all the CEOs of AI and tech companies, and they had a dinner with the British tech and CEO from AI Industries. They signed $42 billion worth of contracts at that dinner as a beginning of a $500 billion relationship to merge the tech sectors. Now, who is behind this? This is the Epstein class. And in fact, the real architect of this has been dead for years, but it's Robert Maxwell, the Israeli British agent. Maxwell's one daughter, Ghislaine, was the procurer for Epstein. He has two other daughters who are older than Ghislaine Maxwell, who are twins, who are at the center of British AI and tech sector. Magellan search engines, by the way, was invented by one of the sisters. So what they're doing is they're putting together the army of the future, not as a sovereign American instrument, but for the empire. And that's why it's interesting that you have Kucinich, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Tucker, the interview that Tucker did with Kucinich. I recommend people take the time to watch it. Because Tucker is legitimately enraged at the U.S. giving up sovereignty over one of the most important things, which is defense of our homeland. Now, the other aspect of this, Sean, the other thing that they're merging is their surveillance technologies. And this is where the Israelis and the U.S. are by far the best in the world. This is what Snowden warned us about after 9/11, that they're going to use the terrorist action, which may have been an internal job, use that to build up the surveillance state and the crackdown on free speech. It's already happened. It's already here. And so if they pass this bill, and it's called Section 219 of the National Defense Authorization Act, we could stop it. If people who watch this call your congressman and say, we don't want Section 219. We don't want to give up our sovereignty to the Zionist billionaire class. If we make that public, we could stop it. They're terrified that this is going to go public, and Tucker did a great service with Kucinich to the American people by putting this out in the public.
Couldn't agree more.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95-plus percent lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of the AlexShipStore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at TheAlexShipStore.com.
Welcome back, folks. If you caught the first 5 minutes of this hour, you saw a video from a man named Harley Schlenger, who's on SGT Report, talking about the merger of Israel's military with America's. This is just an absolutely giant deal. I mean, we're going to dedicate most of the show today to this because I got another longer video from him that I want to play, again, explaining this more thoroughly, some of the, you know, the players in it, and how to actually understand what we're dealing with here as a global Jewish mafia, which is the best way to explain it. Everybody understands mafias. Everybody understands that certain, that it has a certain, I don't get what is this. Sometimes the crew throws things up. I know it's No Country for Old Men. Oh, it's Netanyahu. Okay. I thought he looked a little weird. I think Netanyahu looks too much like him. I couldn't tell it was an edit. I thought it was just a frame from No Country for Old Men. But yeah, okay. Netanyahu's like the bad guy from, the actor's really Zionist as well. Interesting. Oh, he's anti-Zionist. Everything's getting confusing now. Yes, Benjamin Netanyahu is the heartless murderer. It's actually not a bad way of thinking about it. Because, you know, I can tell you what Israel's doing. I can try to put it into words how sort of despicable they are. But like the colors don't look real to you, video on the telescreen, right? It doesn't seem real until you watch it in person, until you see somebody act with the heartless, callous disregard for human life. You know, it's why you watch movies or read fiction. Because reality, I don't know, for some reason it doesn't connect like that. You know, it's more horrifying watching, what's the character's name from that? Do y'all remember? The bad guy from No Country for Old Men. Like, it's more terrifying watching him put the thing up to the guy's forehead and, you know, kill him. That has more of a visceral reaction than like 200 Lebanese people were killed in airstrikes today. Netanyahu says, oops, you know, it's like, you know, what if you could watch each one of those? What if you like could, you know, get a video of the last few seconds of that person's life? Or maybe you got a montage, a collection of sort of them growing and developing and their loves and their family. And then you see it snuffed out in an instant. You know, maybe then people would care about the fact that we are backing up this psychotic cabal of serial killers. But, you know, 10,000 deaths is a statistic, I guess. So we'll play more clips from that guy, Harley Schlenger, here in just a second as we continue to talk about this ridiculously treasonous activity from our own government. Let me just say, by the way, at the end of the last hour, I did a little bit of a rant about how Alex Karp probably should be turned into a lampshade. But let me just lay this out for me, Michael Jones. Alex Karp's claim that he would have ended up as a lampshade if his mother... excuse me, you would have ended up as a lampshade if his mother hadn't left Germany, is based off a publicity stunt orchestrated by General McClure, head of psychological warfare during World War II, and C.D. Jackson, who forced 2,000 Germans to walk from Weimar to Buchenwald. Jackson put on display two shrunken heads, an ashtray made out of a human pelvis, and a lampshade which he claimed was made out of Jewish skin. The shrunken heads were in fact confiscated from a nearby German museum where they were exhibits from the Amazonian rainforest, and the lampshade was made out of goat skin, but both became part of the Hollywood narrative and have been used to this day to justify Jewish privilege, war crimes, and genocide. For the full story, read the Holocaust narrative. So, just to clarify, the reason I'm laughing at the idea of the, because it never happened. Because never. If, on the other hand, you do want to find out about people skinning their enemies, look up who has the biggest skin bank in the world. Tell you what, do me a favor, look up who's got the biggest bank of donated skin organ storage in their country. You'll find out it's Israel, but you'll also find out they don't really allow organ donation in Israel. So where are they getting the skin from, you might wonder? They literally will skin Palestinians. So, you know, every... yeah, the foreskins. No, no. The foreskins you grind into powder and you rub on your face if you're South Korean. Just not lampshades. So one thing you can't do with skin, folks. Yeah, every accusation is a confession. It's disgusting, but everybody should know this stuff. So again, we're talking about Section 219. Oh, wait, I have some updates. I have some actually breaking news. The Israel National Skin Bank, established in 1986 by the IDF, Medical Corps, and the Ministry of Health, is often cited as the largest facility of its kind in the world. It's primarily designed to treat burn victims from wars and mass casualty incidents. Yeah, or just if you're rich or whatever, too, we can do that also. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like a very regular, I mean, I can show you reports on it. It's a major scandal. Yeah, hey, maybe you need a new face for Epstein, you know? Where are you going to get that? You get it from a donor, from an unwitting donor. So we do have some, I tried the foreskin facial treatment so you don't have to. Nobody has to. Nobody has to. All right, we do have some updates out of the U.S. Senate. The U.S. House did advance the Save America Act, bundling voter ID, proof of citizenship, and ending seasonal clock change into a must-pass national security funding this past 2:15 to 2:11. And as John Bowne reports, the Senate just blocked the treason. In a razor-thin 50-46 vote, the United States Senate failed to invoke cloture on S-4784, the monstrous 2027 NDAA that would have fused the U.S. military with Israel through Sections 219 and 1217. They didn't get the 60 votes they needed, the full institutional merger, the executive agent inside the Pentagon, the tech sharing, the co-production, the AI, biotech, and supply chain lockdown got knocked on its ass for now. They know that we know, and their knees are knocking, but don't pop the champagne yet. Turncoat Republican leader Thune immediately flipped his vote and filed a motion to reconsider. They're coming right back. The Epstein class and their agents in Congress aren't giving up that easy. This is their gateway to deeper entanglement, shielding endless aid from scrutiny and locking America into one endless war machine. Call your senators right now, 202-224-3121. Tell them you're watching. Tell them no on any reconsideration. Tell them this isn't an alliance. It's a surrender of American sovereignty. The Senate just bought us a little time, but the battle is far from over. And of course, the Senate Republicans are talking about getting rid of the filibuster so they can just force this through. And they're talking about getting rid of the filibuster to pass the SAVE Act. But then they're like, the Democrats are going to do it if we don't. And we like the filibuster when it's the Democrats in charge. The thing is, if you're going to get rid of the filibuster, you need to have like 9 or 10 pieces of legislation ready to go that will guarantee that you remain in power. As cynical or as, you know, whatever gamesmanship this is, that's what you got to do. Because if you're going to get rid of the filibuster, then the Democrats, when they get in, are going to be able to pass whatever the hell they want. And we know what they're going to pass. I mean, they will eliminate the First Amendment. They will rewrite the Constitution. They will pack the Supreme Court. They'll get rid of the Electoral College. They'll give citizenship to everybody that's come over here. And they'll open up the border for millions more. So that can't happen. So if you get rid of the filibuster, but you don't use that opportunity to solidify your control, then don't do it. You don't get rid of the filibuster because you're frustrated that you can't get, you know, Lindsey Graham's sister on board or whatever. If you're going to get rid of the filibuster, you get rid of the filibuster. You do the SAVE Act to solidify, to, you know, make the everything absolutely clean, the elections absolutely clean. Then you rewrite the 14th Amendment, get rid of that outright. Then you pass laws about deportation. Then you pass laws about welfare collection. Then you pass all these laws that will disenfranchise the Democrats, that will stop them from cheating in the elections, that will expel their power base of foreigners and occupiers. You know, maybe a reformatted version of the Communist Control Act of 1954. You could throw that in there. Then when you destroy the filibuster and you use that opportunity to pass a bunch of legislation to keep Democrats out of power, then you can keep using the filibuster-free Senate to continue to pass things. But if you get rid of the filibuster and then do absolutely nothing, like you've been doing for the last 2 years, doing absolutely nothing to either convince people in America that you're worth voting for or disenfranchise the left, then just don't do it. Then don't do it. But this is the problem with these lukewarm, rhino, fake-ass conservative Republicans that we have up there. They'll never go far enough. We're stuck. We're dying in this gray area middle ground where you got a bunch of centrist boomer dumbasses that still think that American politics is a debate club, when on the other hand, you have the rising, frenetic, psychotic energy of the left forming into the DSA and the communist overthrow that the Republicans keep screeching about, keep warning about. Oh, they seem so concerned, but are doing absolutely nothing to stop it. And there's innumerable things they could do. They're not doing any of them at all. Hell, we could use those warships that are in Iran right now. We could use those for deportations if we really wanted, because deportations would obviously attribute. Like, here's the thing. Either you got to actually win on merit, meaning you actually have to provide for your constituency, means you have to actually pass the bills they want to actually benefit them tangibly. Then people will just vote for you and you don't have to worry about the Democrats because your popularity will be such that you'll win. That's one option. And in order to do that, you should be pushing mass deportations. You should be, hell, why don't you free up that $1.2 billion settlement that was supposed to go to Republicans and your constituents that were persecuted by the Biden regime? It's the Republicans that aren't letting that out. So this lukewarm, again, and I wish, but it's retarded, but this retarded adherence to like small government principles, but they only apply if and when something might accidentally benefit your constituents, then your financial responsibility kicks into gear and you put your foot down. But, $100 trillion to wage war overseas for Israel? Pfft. How dare you suggest we don't do that? I don't even think we should have to notice. I think the Israeli government should just have a checking book with our account on it. So it's let's go to the video of Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, 22. I mean, they seem serious. He seems like he's actually genuinely concerned about the rising specter of communism in America. The question is, what is he doing about it? And the answer is nothing but complaining and whining and bitching. Like Brianna Morello tweeted out today, she retweeted the House Republican Twitter account that was just like, you know, communism is bad. And she's like, communism is actually taking over America. They could do something to stop it, but they'd rather just make, you know, cute little tweets like this. They're letting communists take over so that they can make little cute tweets and act like they're standing up against something. They're not. It's their fault. Let's go to clip 22 here. This is Mike Johnson, seemingly genuinely concerned about the rise of popularity in socialist and communist politicians here in America. Let's watch.
It's in their platform. They want to remove the carceral state, they said. No prisons. They don't want to fund the police.
this is not a game. Everybody needs to understand these crazy little mini Mom Donnies who are popping up all around the country. They are a danger to you and your family. This is not a game. If they promise you free stuff, there is far more beneath those promises that even some of these people do not understand themselves. And so we are here as the Republican Party to stand on the founding principles of the greatest nation in the history of the world. It is our duty to do that. And we're doing it on behalf of all of you, even the journalists who don't agree with our policies all the time. You better agree on these principles, because it's what keeps you free. By the way, it's what keeps the press free, okay? This is essential for your well-being and your family. This is not a game. This is not our father's Democrat Party. This is not, we're not arguing over marginal tax rates anymore. We're arguing over whether or not freedom is going to survive. And that's why we're so serious about this.
But how serious are they about it? They're not doing anything to actually confront it. If he actually believed anything he just said, he would be denaturalizing people who are foreigners but belong to the Communist Party. He would be doing something tangible to do anything. Brandon Morello, foreign communists are rising to power in the United States under Republican leadership. Pay attention. Absolutely. Yeah, and this is the other one. Republicans are in full control right now and allowing foreign communists to rise to power. Why? So they can put up cute tweets like this. And it's the House Republicans. America will never be a communist country. Well, why not? What's the argument? What argument are you actually making? You can't just say, like, freedom. We're fighting for freedom. What does that mean? You want to elucidate that? How were people supposed to... I don't want to beat a dead horse. I don't want to just say the same thing over and over. It's the contented workman. All right, now let's look at this. I tweeted this out, I think, on Saturday. I say, this might be a bit conspiratorial, but hear me out. Trump and other Republicans just started talking explicitly about the threat of communists. But the admin actually isn't doing anything about Antifa, DSA, or literal avowed, often foreign-born communists. Every major U.S. labor union led by UAW is teaming up with the DSA to plan a nationwide strike on May Day 2028. They plan to indefinitely paralyze the entire American economy until their demands, like universal free healthcare and deportations, etc., are met. This is literally exactly how every single genuine communist revolution begins. So my purpose for writing this are twofold. Or, well, really, it's one or the other. Either Trump and the Republicans actually do oppose communism, in which case I'm begging them on my hands and knees to actually do something for the love of God to stop the giant obvious revolution that all of the communists are currently training and organizing for. Or maybe they don't actually care. Maybe they're in on the plot, in which case, can you see this come to fruition? If Trump is in on the big plot and just setting himself up as the anti-communist leader for a conflict he's secretly helping to engineer, then I want to let everybody else know that it looks like there's a civil war scheduled for the summer of 2028, and Trump may get the canceled election and third term he covets so. And then, of course, you have all these images of the organizations, the DSA, the UAW, these major labor organizations, just openly planning about overthrowing the government on May 1st, 2028. We're going to create a crisis for the billionaire class. We know when workers align their fights on the same timeline, we have more leverage than we do alone. What if we didn't just do it in a corporate chain or one union, but across the country in labor movement? Now's the time to get ready to create a crisis for the bosses. Find our shared enemies, organize. So, I mean, literally, we're 2 years out, and they're spending the next 2 years training their followers for an uprising that they intend to become a full-fledged communist revolution. And it's like, it is actually the playbook. I mean, Germany 1918, Russia 1914 through 17 or so. This is what they do. They get into the labor unions. They use the labor unions to organize. They do strikes to shut down the economy and make demands. They demand positions for themselves as oversight or, you know, in the government or to, you know, officially provide a method by which the Soviets, the communes, could make demands and have them carried out. This is how communist revolutions work. In the past, any time it failed was a time like Germany 1918, where the Free Corps, just on their own volition, decided to go kill the communists that had taken over the city hall. Is America going to do that? The American people would. But again, the question is, if they're so concerned about communism, if they really are this terrified of the rising specter of genuine communism, which it's like you hear them talk about stuff and it's all just this kind of lackluster, like, yeah, you know, discrimination's kind of bad and we're working on fixing it. And you get this feeling like these guys have no idea what's going on. When they talk about communism, I actually hear the severity. I actually hear Johnson being like, we cannot allow this. Like, this is really bad, you guys. Like, it actually seems sincere for once. It seems like they're actually looking around going, wait, they're actual communists and they're actually gaining power. So, okay, if you really are this concerned, if you really are scared of this development, then you have to do something about it. I'm constantly bringing up the contented workmen. People who have nice jobs, who are building something for the future, they not only will not become communists, they'll help you fight back against communists. But when you've set up a system, an economic system, in which people are working themselves to the bone to barely survive, where all of our wealth and prosperity is being offshored to other countries because our, you know, politicians despise us, what do you think is going to happen? People are going to go to the only people offering a solution, which is the Democrats and the communists at this point. You need to actually make the case, and you need to prove that case with results. You can talk about how capitalism is the superior system, but people live in a capitalist system right now, and they're miserable. So you have to reform the system. You have to correct the system. You have to use governmental power to put limitations on the capitalistic system so it stops exploiting people so they don't think they need communist revolution to simply live a productive life. So I'm glad to see Mike Johnson and Donald Trump talk about communism. I'd like to see them do literally anything to stop their rise. Literally anything. Arresting communists, actually putting the Communist Control Act into effect, actually deporting people that are foreign communists, causing problems on our soil. Like, do something. I mean, go in, audit higher education. If they're teaching communist principles in their classrooms, which they 100% absolutely are in every single classroom, then remove their federal funding until they correct that, just like you did for the Jews when it came to anti-Semitism. Do it for Americans when it comes to communism. They won't do it. So I don't think they actually care. So I'm like, all right, do they know that this revolution is coming? We got 2 years to prepare. The left is preparing. They're building networks. They're arming themselves. They're training. They're creating communications strategies. I mean, they're doing it. We could stop them at any point. Wouldn't be difficult. Not for the U.S. government. They won't do it. Okay, so maybe that's what they're planning. Maybe that's why Trump thinks he's going to get a third term. Maybe they know that there's going to be a big uprising on May 1st, 2028. They're planning for that. They're going to actually encourage it in whichever ways that they can, either by sort of haphazardly trying to clamp down on it, kind of like they did with Black Lives Matter, but actually like let it flourish. And maybe they're, you know, they want a violent conflict to break out. Maybe the easiest way to cripple and ultimately destroy the United States is have Americans turn on each other in a civil war-like situation with Donald Trump in power, right? Because you got to consider, right, if you have an uprising that devolves into civil war, who's in charge? Who is sitting in the presidency? Because now they've got an excuse to go, we can't hold an election. We got all these problems happening. Maybe I need to stay in office to handle this situation. So maybe, you know, by 2028, it's Black Lives Matter 2.0 times 10, and there's actual combat in the street, and there's actually American soldiers being deployed to deal with uprisings and takeovers of cities across the country. Maybe it gets really bad, and Donald Trump remains in office as they orchestrate this manufactured communistic civil war, at the end of which either they, you know, are going to make America a communist nation, and we'll just be the Soviet Union 2.0, only this time there won't be a corresponding superpower to try to free the people of the United States, or, you know, maybe they establish a, you know, actual like fascist regime, only this time under the Star of David instead of the swastika. Either way, I don't like it. And knowing that the people in power have the ability to shut it down in an instant, but don't, and they're not doing that, I think we all need to be prepared for this eventuality. Because it's coming, and the flock cameras are being built.
I don't have to sell you on bovine colostrum. Almost everybody knows for decades and decades, doctors recommend it to patients. It's been all the rage. It's the first 2 weeks of milk that come from a cow or any other mammal. It's not normal milk. It's not white. It's clear. It's full of all these peptides and amino acids and growth factors and things that literally accelerate tissue repair and so much more. But the issue is our bovine colostrum is a private label of the top rated brand in the country. They let us put our label on it and we sell it for a little bit less than it's sold in stores. And then you're funding our operation. It's a total 360 win. But here's where I drop the ball. I've been promoting this bovine colostrum for almost a year since our sponsor, Big Lee, came out with it. And I just basically talk about, hey, it's great for your hair, great for your skin, you know, great for all of that. But that's just what you see on the surface. Yeah, your fingernails are thicker. They grow quicker. Women, you know, since the 60s have been taking it. But if it's doing that to the outside, what is it doing to the inside? So I wanted to just read some of the things that's in bovine colostrum and explain to you how ours is 4 times stronger than the average stuff on the market and at least twice as strong as leading competitors. It's cold pressed. It's never been homogenized either or boiled or heated up to 250 degrees. So it keeps the cofactors alive. It's super concentrated. One little scoop from the powder is your daily intake, and it's amazing. But now our sponsors come out with these great naturally flavored grape gummies that has a full day concentrated allowance in each gummy. So let me now read to you just some of the ingredients and what it does. The vast majority of colostrum products, again, are flavorless, but the key is they are only 10 to 20% IgG. Ours is 40% IgG. That's double to quadruple the potency of the competitors. And it's a delicious, all-natural, grape-flavored gummy. So it habituates it. People love it and want to keep taking it. Immune Health IgG and Lactoferrin Defense. IgG immunoglobulins are the body's primary antibody defense. Colostrum's natural lactoferrin is a potent antimicrobial protein that binds iron and inhibits pathogen growth. Together, they prime and strengthen the immune system year-round, starting with the gut, and it's good for all the rest of the body and the organs. Gut support integrity. Colostrum contains growth factors IGF-1 and EGF. These help repair and maintain the gut lining. This makes it especially valuable for anyone dealing with leaky gut, digestive discomfort, or looking to optimize nutrient absorption. It's great for young people, but really essential for old folks. Because as you get older, the gut absorbs less and less. The bioactive peptides and growth factors in colostrum support faster tissue repair and lean muscle recovery after exercise, making these gummies a smart addition to any active lifestyle or fitness routine. And again, this is a 40% concentration. You're not going to find that anywhere else. Each gummy is 600 milligram concentrate of the highest quality bovine colostrum. That's not some little petty dose. That is a big dose that will give you big results. And of course, the colostrum are from good old cows right here in the USA. Ladies and gentlemen, if you love the powder, you're going to love the gummies. It's an incredible product. What it does for you internally is even bigger than what it does for your hair, your nails, and your skin. So get the powder and get the grape gummies right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air. Be healthier. Have a better life. A true 360 win. Thank you for your support. And the gummies are discounted for a limited time out of the gates. Again, at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Let me just try to illustrate this just a little bit here. We got this, we got that, we got this. Okay. So, got the Israeli section. But this is what I'm talking about. I didn't compile my other section, but I think you're aware of just some of the chaos and misery that's spreading around right now. So you've got, like, on one hand, you've got, like, cyclosporiasis cases in Michigan surpass 3,000, as health officials say lettuce or green salads, salad greens could be the source. 44 people have been hospitalized, according to the health department, because our open borders is, killing us, giving people weeks-long diarrhea because the immigrants don't wash their hands. Meanwhile, ICE to temporarily halt conducting vehicle stops, sources say. So during a vehicle stop, immigrant trying to escape ICE tried to run over an ICE agent, got shot and killed. Now we're stopping vehicle stops, which is, can we stop doing this? We don't need to do this. It doesn't matter. This doesn't happen in any other situation. Imagine if this was the case in any other situation. The cops try to pull somebody over. They pull a gun on the cops fire back. They try to run over the cops fire back. Somebody ends up dead from a traffic infraction stop. And then the police just go, you know what? I guess we just can't do traffic infraction stops anymore. I guess we're just not going to do that anymore because one guy tried to kill us and we had to kill him. So now, we're not arresting people anymore. I mean, this is retarded. This is stupid. This is so stupid. And Nick Sortor, had a good comment on it where he's just like, they did this. They stopped the vehicle, arrests in order to appease the left. The left is never going to be appeased until the borders are totally open and everybody here is given citizenship. Stop trying to appease the left. Just deport the people. If one of them gets killed, go, well, then he should have left. He shouldn't have tried to run over an ICE officer. Shouldn't have tried to kill one of us. He wouldn't have died. He could have lived his life to 100 years old in El Salvador, where he's from. Like, go home. What is the problem? Why can we not do that? DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen personally gave the order for ICE to suspend all non-urgent vehicle stops. Susan Collins confirms this is total capitulation to the left. ICE arrests will drop off a cliff, just as leftist terrorists demanded. Illegals will now sprint to the driver's seat and run, knowing they can't be stopped. This is weak. And in all honesty, it's almost certainly going to lead to more deaths. Because you know what happens when a criminal is murdered and the cops say, oh, well, tough crap, you should have listened to orders. The next immigrant listens to orders. If instead you go, oh, my God, we're so sorry. This was, terrible. And we're going to stop doing enforcement from now on because this happened. You're incentivizing the immigrants or the people you're trying to capture to run away, to fight back, to actually cause the situations that can become dangerous and end in a death. You're actually creating more of those by giving in, you absolute morons. And the solution to immigrants being killed by ICE is for the immigrants to behave themselves and go home. That's the only solution. Getting a little bit distracted here, but a little tangent. And so again, I could just go on and on, whether it's the house prices being astronomical, the inflation being higher than expected, the unemployment being absolutely huge, the H-1B visa scandal where we're being robbed at every pass. There's a lot of problems in America. There are a lot of things that we could really use the federal government's help to correct. And that wouldn't necessarily be that difficult to correct if we just had the bare minimum concern from the people that are our representatives. We're getting medieval diseases again. We're can't afford a house or a home. Got homeless camps cropping up in every major city. Meanwhile, just from today, Trump formally informs Congress of Iran war resumption. We got to go to war with Iran. New bipartisan bill seeks to outlaw criticism of Israel and Jewish people. That's the Jewish American Safety Act. Obviously, got to be the top priority. Marco Rubio slams radical extreme international criminal court as Trump admin limits its power over the U.S. Because, of course, our federal government, first and foremost, has to prioritize the feelings of Israel. And they're mad the ICC exists. So that's our responsibility now. Section 219, the U.S.-Israeli merger, military merger would thwart American democracy from common dreams. The merger would connect the U.S. and Israeli militaries in unprecedented ways and make it exceedingly difficult for any future president to unwind this partnership with a foreign government, no matter what public opinion says. Trump's ex-campaign manager is running an Israeli influence operation targeting the MAGA base. So it's just, this is every day. Every day, there's a stack of headlines about how America is collapsing and failing and misery abounds, and there's a corresponding sack with everything the American government is doing to help Israel, to help them avoid consequences in the ICC, to help them avoid oversight from the immense amounts of money that we give them. From just trying to make it to where people can't even criticize Israel in the United States, because in the comparison between the First Amendment or our slavish devotion to the Jewish state, our politicians choose slavish devotion to the Jewish state. This is a problem, and it's only going to get significantly worse if Section 219 and 1217 pass, and it's already unbearable and needs to change. It needs to change. So let's talk a little bit more about just how utterly treasonous all of this is. I want to go now, once again, to the guy we had earlier. I'll get his name here in just a second. Harley Schlanger. Harley Schlanger, once again, was on SGT Report, clip number 7, talking about the Zionist Mafia, of which Rubio is a kingpin. Let's watch. 7.
They're going to set up Vance. And, you know, Vance is not squeaky clean. He's got this Peter Thiel from Palantir that has his hands all over Vance. But Vance was set up to follow through the memo of understanding, which now Rubio is sabotaging. So the idea, and I got this from several people, different people in intelligence, is that Vance will be knocked out because of the failure of the attempt to have a ceasefire with Iran. Rubio will be put in as vice president, and then after the midterm elections, Trump will be impeached. Now, that is a conspiracy theory, but it's plausible, because the reason they want Rubio goes back as a child to Cuban drug-pushing networks. He lived with his uncle, who was a drug pusher. When he got into the Congress, who did he get in with right away? The veterans from the Bay of Pigs. Now, the Bay of Pigs, remember, was the CIA attempt to overthrow Castro. Now, furthermore, Rubio became a very close ally of Jeb Bush in Florida. And then on top of that, he has the Zionist connections. And these include billionaires like Paul Singer of Elliott Management, who calls himself a vulture capitalist. Larry Ellison of Oracle, who's very close to Epstein. These are the Epstein billionaires. They're the ones who pulled together the British, the American, the Israeli. Remember, Ehud Barak was part of the Epstein network, the former prime minister of Israel. But here's the point, Sean. They're trying to protect a collapsing empire. The empire is collapsing because of debt. Now, if people are quiet and accept cuts in their standard of living, they'll be able to bail themselves out. That's what they've always done. They use the plunge protection team, which is another way of saying printing money or creating new credit that goes into the pockets of the swindlers, the international bankers, and is paid for out of taxes of the average working person. And they use the wars to loot other countries. Now, what's happened is they're in a squeeze right now, because the nations of the global south, the so-called developing sector nations, are now starting to say, we want to have sovereignty. You know, we were talking about this before, the Declaration of Independence. I was at an event with an ambassador from Ethiopia. He loves the United States. And he said, we in Ethiopia want to be like the United States used to be, where we control our own sovereignty, our own future. That's the thinking of a lot of young people in Africa, in Asia, that are trying to break with the International Monetary Fund and the petrodollar empire. And who are they getting support from? Russia and China. Now, what happens in the West? We have Trump, who understands this is going on, but doesn't know what to do because he's conflicted. He's got, you know, he's got these people in his cabinet. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary. Sean, you know Bessent's background, George Soros. So why is Trump having a Soros operative running the Treasury? And they're going to try and bail out the 20 or the 30, whatever it is now, $39 trillion debt. They're going to try and bail it out with your tax dollars. Let me just tell you what they're doing in Germany, because this will give you a sense that the uprising that's going to occur will be international. Merz, the Chancellor of Germany, who wants more money for war against Russia. Merz is going to try and cut the pension, the state pension fund in Germany, which will cause an explosion. But here's what he wants to do. He wants to privatize it, turn it over to private funds to manage. What was Merz doing before he became Chancellor of Germany? Head of BlackRock in Germany. So this is the BlackRock hedge fund operation to steal the pensions, the same way they're going to try and steal Social Security in this country. Now, will people put up with it? That's the question. We're seeing a blowback. You know, Merz is at 20% popularity. Starmer got driven out because of his connection to the Epstein class. Macron is basically a corpse. No support, under 10%. Now, Trump is heading in that direction. If he doesn't break with this network, he's going to be next. And that will mean we'll end up with Marco Rubio as president. So the rebellion is taking place internationally. Now, one of the things that happened with this Iran war is that because the Iranian people did not capitulate, they showed that the United States has hollowed out our military and that we depend on Israel's intelligence. The Israelis told us, Barnea, the head of the Mossad, told Trump, the Iranian government will collapse as soon as you kill the Grand Ayatollah. Well, we just saw a funeral with 12 million people in the street. Doesn't look like it's collapsed. Trump was lied to. Will he learn the lesson? Has he learned from Russiagate? Has he learned from the opposition to him that you have to throw these people not only out of the cabinet, but put them in jail, the Epstein crowd? And that's where the American people come in. It's really going to be up to us to raise a stink. And one of the things we can do is use this Section 219 of the merger of the U.S. military with the Israeli military as a way to force Congress to recognize that the American people aren't buying this anymore. So, you know, Sean, here's the answer to your question. Is there a reason to see the glass as half full? Well, it depends on the American people. We've let the nation down quite a bit in the recent years. We bought into the idea of entertainment and the rock, sex, drug counterculture and so on. But it's rotten. The Epstein class shows us how rotten and corrupt this is, including the people at the top of the establishment. If we get our act together, and there are people running in the elections who are independent and not part of the Democratic and Republican Party, you know, it's funny. Some of them are leftists who oppose the Epstein class, and some are conservatives who oppose the Epstein class. I don't really care what they call themselves. We've got to take this corrupt core down.
Very, very brilliant stuff. Again, from Harley Schlinger. You can follow him on X at Harley Schlinger. Just laying out some of the connections. We could elaborate on all of them, right? You can talk about how Rubio was actually mentioned in correspondence. I believe it was between Ehud Barak and Larry Ellison, as they're talking about how Tony Blair and Rubio are great agents for them and will serve them well. This was before he was actually in office. So yes, he's an agent of the international Jewish mafia. That's what this is. It's who it is. And of course, reminded me that Friedrich Merz, the Chancellor of Germany, is a BlackRock banker, but also Macron was a Rothschild banker, leader of Canada, Carney. He was a Bank of England banker. Gee, I wonder who the next Prime Minister of England is going to be. You think he's going to be coming from the banking sector? I wonder. Of course, America, we have Trump, but right behind him are George Soros' guy, Scott Bessent, as well as BlackRock and Larry Fink, who now runs the World Economic Forum and is helping to quarterback all of this. Again, do we understand we are under attack from a gigantic mafia that is trying to solidify its absolute control over all of us? And let's not forget, so you've got the wars, obviously, that we're fighting on their behalf. That comes along with a greater emphasis for speech control and other stuff, since they're not just saying things you don't like. They're enemy combatants. And we'll get to that in just a second. But continuing with, you know, the people speaking up about this, this is former Congressman Dennis Kucinich. I believe this was on the Ron Paul show, clip 21 here. Here's Dennis Kucinich on the U.S.-Israel defense tech cooperation. Let's watch.
Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, has taken credit for the legislation that that was put into the National Defense Authorization Act of 2027. He basically said, yeah, this is what I want. Well, he wants it because he'll have the ability to direct the U.S. military. I mean, it's mind-boggling when you think about it. And this particular proposal, by the way, the way it's structured, and you know, when I first heard about it, I said, I have to read the legislation, because let me tell you, folks who are watching, you have to read the legislation in order to understand its workings. And the way this is written, it puts the Department of Defense in the driver's seat over other federal departments, including state. And then this policy has it runs through the whole government. This really, you could almost say this is a takeover. And for some it'll sound hysterical, but the truth is that it is laying the groundwork for a for an entanglement that that has never happened in the history of the United States. This is totally unprecedented.
And that's the thing. They honestly just wanted this to sort of pass through without anybody noticing. We've noticed now. We can make a big deal out of it because this is unprecedented. They're trying to portray this as you've heard Netanyahu say. He's just like, well, it's just simple. You know, it's just, we just want to, you know, get out from under, you know, America. We want a partnership rather than a dependency. And it's all just very, this is all very, you know, by the book. No. This is a completely unprecedented, shocking betrayal of American sovereignty. And that's how it needs to be treated, obviously. Let's go to one more clip 29 here. This is former CIA officer John Kiriakou talking about the Zionist regime's attempted takeover of the American government. Let's watch.
One thing that most mainstream outlets don't talk about is that the Israelis are already in the United States training local police departments. We know, for example, that the Israelis are training the Atlanta police, that this area now called Cop City is the site of Israeli police and Israeli IDF training our own police. I don't want the Israelis training American police departments. The Israelis have no respect for human rights or civil liberties.
Civil liberties. Yeah, absolutely. And this, if you actually look into the like training manuals and stuff, anyway, we've been talking about this forever because this was always the thing. I mean, this has been the case since 9/11, essentially, is local police departments, if they wanted assistance from federal budgets, they had to participate in training. They had to buy army surplus so they could, you know, have the big armored vehicles and stuff. I mean, the American police force, the local police forces have been incentivized over decades to bring in more and more of the idea of we're not the local community police here, you know, to serve the people, but rather we are the authority. They are the subjects. We are at constant war with them. That's the mindset that's been seeded, which has led to the rise in, you know, police violence and all the other stuff that then gets blamed on racism, so we can never actually solve the real problem, which no small part is we're being trained by the IDF and the American people are being instructed, the American police are being instructed to treat the American people like the Israelis treat the Gazans. Total disrespect. And, I mean, you can see training manuals where it's like, how to subdue somebody with your gun. And it's like, okay, so this is a situation where you are armed and armored with a gun, but you're not trying to kill the other person. You're going to use the weapon to subdue them physically because they're unarmed and you're armed. It's a manual for oppression. It's how to oppress people is a lot of the tactics from the IDF, right? When you have a gun and they don't, here's how you don't use it to kill them, but use it to, you know, beat them into submission. From the constitutionalist at We Will Be Free 24 on X, NDAA Section 219, what is it? U.S. Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative, formerly Section 224. Section 219, H.R. 8800, advanced out of the House Armed Services Committee June 4th, despite efforts to strike it. Senate Section 1217, Senate 4784, advanced out of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Now the two chambers will negotiate through the reconciliation process until either it passes with amendments merging the two, or they strip the Israeli military integration clause from the NDA 2027. Concerns deep, excessive integration. It creates a DOD executive agent to deeply integrate Israeli tech, AI, cyber, drones, missile defense, biotech, data fusion, co-production into U.S. systems and supply chain as a de facto military-industrial merger, i.e. counter-unmanned systems, anti-tunneling, subterranean threats, missile air defense, AI autonomous systems, directed energy, cyber electronic warfare, biotechnology, network integration, data fusion, defense industrial-based co-production, and other emerging technologies. It removes independent U.S. decision-making on congressional oversight on the integration within the merger agreement. It restricts the president's executive power on decisions deemed as immediate threats due to the coordination. Three, it shifts from providing U.S. aid to partnership in what they're calling a fiscal entanglement. Four, the named executive agent, DOD official, approved by Israel with the Secretary of Defense, will coordinate with the Department of State, Department of Commerce, DNI, NSA on tech, intelligence, data fusion, training, policy, and export controls. These influencers who want this attached to the SAVE Act are paid. This is the most dangerous legislation in the history of the country, and you can actually read the legislation yourself to confirm that this is actually what it would entail. So again, we have to stop this because once it's in place, there is no undoing it, except, and here's what I'll say. How about I throw this down for you? If this passes, I'm voting Democrat. If the 219, 224, 1217, if this merger with the Israeli government passes, I'm going to vote for Democrats on the off chance that, you know, anti-Israel Democrats will get into office and will throw all of these people in jail for treason. The Republicans obviously aren't going to do that. They don't understand nationalism. They think Israel is better than us. So I want them all in jail. I want them all thrown in jail. And if AOC is the one to do it, she's got my vote. So that's where I'm at now. If this passes, if 219 is not stripped from the bill, if we actually merge with the Israeli military, I don't even know how this is legal. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez questioning how lawmakers can disappear from Congress for months without public explanation. I am going to vote Democrat if this goes through. I've said over and over again, I understand the impulse, you know, not to vote Republican because you have to punish them. I still think that is a perfectly valid strategy. Can I say, I'll say it one more time. If this, here's my deal, and I want to know who out there is with me. If Section 219 passes, if the Israeli military is allowed to merge with the American military, I'm voting Democrats in November. I'm voting Democrat on the off chance that the Democrats can sweep into office, undo this merger, and then throw everybody that voted in favor of it into prison for treason. That's how I feel. That's how strongly I feel about this. I've never said I was voting for Democrats because I don't want James Tallarico anywhere near my children, but I'll do it. In this case, this to me is the line. And maybe, just maybe, if enough people join me on this and make this public and call their representatives and say, this is my line. If you merge American military and Israeli military, I'm out. I'm voting Democrat straight ballot as a protest vote against this exact merger. Then we might be able to stop it. But we've got to do something. And if our Queen AOC is the one to do it, fine. I just want to see these people in prison for treason.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts. Go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you. Meta, Facebook is watching you. Amazon. All of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system. Even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. and FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
It's really extraordinary seeing the perspective of a lot of young people that are very impressionable that come out of universities and have an utter, complete disdain for these successful societies. And instead of looking at these successful societies and saying, well, yeah, people were really terrible in the past, but this is a pretty good example of how people should be treated equally today. No, it's not perfect, but it's progressing in a better direction than it was in the past, right? Instead, they look to the past and everything is built on this horrible history of outrageous, atrocious acts, and therefore it must be punished currently. And all the people that benefited from it, specifically white people, need to be cast out. They need to be silenced. Multiculturalism is the only way to go. Complete open borders. Like, the way they look at things is like, how do you think these countries got so good? Like, what do you think is about America or about England, about any of these countries that leads them to be where they are today? Well, it's a long history of progress, a long history. And along the way, yeah, like, especially people everywhere, you know, humans are just getting better at being people, like, pretty recently. But to throw it all out and abandon it and to think that socialism is gonna fix you, like, do you guys read anything? There's not a single example of that not turning to tyranny. And their take on it is always, it hasn't been done correctly. And that is so wild that people are still willing to swallow that. And the only thing that makes sense is they've been indoctrinated through universities to think this way. Because nowhere in the real world do you think that equality of outcome ever makes any sense. Because everybody realizes somewhere along the line, when you get your first job, when you're a kid, when you're going through school, when you're playing sports, there's not equality of effort. There's never equality of effort. And there's always some people that want to put in more effort, and they're put in more thought and more focus, and they get further. Are you sure that's everything? Because it seems like it's not. And it seems like as soon as you remove any incentive to succeed, then you don't have any of the amazing stuff that you have around you all the time. The reason why you have beautiful televisions and Starlink and all that, it's capitalism. It's that you have to incentivize people to create these things.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean not correct. It could be done correctly. It could be done humanely. It can be done wisely. You could vote with your dollars. You could, you know, boycott companies that do things that you don't think are ethical. There's all sorts of wonderful ways that capitalism could be used, and you can sort of influence things in the right direction. But to throw it all out and say we've got to go socialism, like, oh boy, I can't believe people are buying that. That to me is one of the real problems with not allowing conservative voices in universities, and that these universities, especially in the United States, or a lot of, especially like in sociology, psychology, and the overwhelmingly liberal. Like, surely there's got to be some historians out there that are conservative, and they would have a different perspective. And it might be good to have diversity of opinion, as well as diversity of national origin, as well as diversity of gender, as well as diversity of sexual orientation. Yeah, all that stuff's great. But also diversity of opinion.
Yeah.
Like, the only way to know whether or not this person's making sense is to have someone who completely disagrees, that has a better point, go up against them, and you watch them duke it out. And as soon as you silence all that because students don't feel safe, or because, you know, this is promoting X, Y, and Z. This person's a Nazi. Oh, they're a Nazi. We can't let them on there. As soon as you do that, you ruin the whole thing that a university is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be preparing young minds for discourse and for communicating and for figuring out the world on their own. They're eventually going to be independent and dependent entirely on their own actions and decisions and go out there in the world, figure out your way. Arm them correctly, and the way to do that is to expose them to all sorts of different competing ideas. The idea that that was ever accepted to be shut down in this country, especially in America, is a massive failure of the education system. Just massive. If you think that someone has bad points, come up with better points and let them duke it out. And don't pull fire alarms, and don't silence them, and don't scream and protest and throw things at them. Communicate. This is what and anybody who doesn't do that should be shunned.
Fellow Americans, I'm back. The Nixon 28 collection is now available, and I must say, it looks tremendous. Go to the AliceJonesStore.com and pick yours up today. You'll be glad you did. Ultimate Power Drink Mix. The fantasy is real, and it's delicious. Visit the AlexJonesStore.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. Third hour is on. We still have a lot to talk about. We'll probably move away here a little bit from Israel, but not too far, but not really. But actually, we're probably going to stay on it for a little bit because there's a lot more still to cover. I do want to tell you, however, that we have a new product at the Alex Jones Store, thealexjonesstore.com. It is the Ultimate Turmeric Tincture. If you have been a fan of InfoWars and Alex Jones Network products for a while, you know some of our best-selling, most popular products are turmeric-based. And that's a very good reason for that. Turmeric is an incredible anti-inflammatory. And the way that we extract it, the way that we, you know, get the turmeric, we maximize the curcuminoids, which are the active ingredient in the turmeric, meaning that, you know, you can take one little dropper of ours and it's the equivalent of an entire bottle of another brand. The gold standard of turmeric has arrived. It is the new Ultimate Turmeric Tincture, one of the most advanced liquid turmeric formulas we've ever offered at thealexjonesstore.com. This fast-absorbing liquid tincture is formulated with premium turmeric root, standardized for 95% curcuminoids. Standardized to 95% curcuminoids, the most powerful and extensively studied active compounds found in turmeric. We've combined it with ginger root and black pepper extract to help dramatically increase absorption so your body can make the most of every serving. Unlike ordinary turmeric supplements, this premium liquid formula is designed for superior absorption and maximum bioavailability. No fillers, no junk, just real ingredients that work together. Each little bottle has 60 servings. Ultimate Turmeric Tincture is formulated to support healthy joints, mobility, antioxidant defense, digestive health, and your body's healthy inflammatory response as part of a healthy lifestyle. And right now, when you subscribe, you'll get an incredible 50% off. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today and get the new Ultimate Turmeric Tincture. Take control of your health, support the broadcast, and experience the difference premium fast-absorbing turmeric can make. And, you know, whether it was the old product Bodies or anything else, I know turmeric works. Like, I know from personal experience how well turmeric works in my own life and my own personal experience, you know, being sore from working out or, you know, playing sports or whatever. I would always go to turmeric, take advantage of the curcuminoids. You can do it yourself by going to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. Subscribe for 50% off the Ultimate Turmeric Supplement, Ultimate Turmeric Tincture, now available at thealexjonesstore.com. Let's keep talking about Israel, shall we? Let's go to clip 36 here, because this is what we need to be doing. This is the beginning, an effective start to a campaign of opposition to the takeover of America by Israel. And it starts with regular people like you standing up and speaking out against this hostile, genocidal foreign state. Let's watch. Audio.
Else's military, but we don't have money for ourselves and our needs. And this applies directly to Israel on this one. Yeah, I feel for the Israeli people, but y'all keep electing the Likud party. And it ain't just Netanyahu. Smotrich, not a good dude. Ben-Gavir, these guys celebrate slaughtering people. We're not okay with that. We're not supporting that. If Israel wants to get serious about getting peace in the Middle East, it starts with stop the encouragement of these settlements. Why are we funding, why are we allowing them to fund these settlements? That's not operating in good faith. You're the more powerful entity here. You make the first concession showing that we're being serious and we want this. And we're going to do that by not having these settlers keep taking your territory, harassing you, just being everything they encounter, Hamas is being, that's how they're behaving. I'll be honest, as an American, how would we behave if we were treated the way the Palestinians were? Are we just going to tolerate that? No, we'd be standing up. We'd be outraged. We'd be rebelling. Hamas doesn't represent all the Palestinian folks, just the way the Likud party doesn't represent all the Israeli folks. But they got choices, and they're choosing to support people like Netanyahu and Ben-Gavir and Smotrich. And I'm not okay with them. I'm sure not cool with funding them. I'm sure not cool with Mossad continually spying on us and trying to influence our elections and influence our populace. The MAGA has missed a key couple letters in their America First. It should be Americans first, the people. Thank you.
So I thought that was absolutely fantastic. That just goes to show, I mean, being informed is what you need, you know, because they'll try to, you know, distract you. Well, they're just defending ourselves. But if you can go, well, here's what Ben-Gavir says. Here's what Smotrich says. Here's what Netanyahu says. Here's what they do. And I love, and how many times have I said that exact thing? I'm just like, what would you do if you were the Palestinians? This was always the strangest thing, is you got these good old boys, like Texas dudes, that just be like, them Palestinians need to know their place. It's like, what are you talking about? You're the person with who's like, they, you know, from my cold dead hands, they'll come try to take my guns, or they tried that here, they'll see some good old boys get up to some stuff. And it's like, would you though? Would you carry on a rebellion for 80 years? Against overwhelming odds? Would you actually carry on a seemingly hopeless resistance for four generations? Because America's being taken over right now, and you're not doing anything about it, so. It's just obscene. It really is. Now, I got one more video, and we won't go to the whole thing, and I don't even know if it's worth it to go to. But I do think it's a fascinating piece of insight from Glenn Beck. And I think it's weird hearing, especially somebody like Glenn Beck, talk like this. He's basically laying out what the new strategy in Iran is. And it's like the most evil thing I've ever heard. It's crazy. And it's crazy that this is coming from, you know, Glenn Beck, who, say what you want about him, has always come across to me as a very sincere, like, family man. And while I think his positions are absurd, and especially his position on Israel is cucked beyond imagination, but he seems sincere. He seems faithful. He seems like a genuine good person, which is why it's so weird to hear him supporting what is in many ways the most evil possible outcome of all of this. Let's go to Glenn Beck here, clip 40. Here's Glenn Beck explaining the best card the Trump administration has to play when it comes to this war in Israel, in Iran. Let's watch.
Yesterday, I told you that Donald Trump is hunting. He is actually hunting for something in Iran. And he's not hunting for a moderate. He is not hunting for a good man. He is hunting for an Albert Speer. You don't know who Albert Speer is. He was good friend of Hitler. He was the architect for Hitler, a really bad guy, just escaped the noose in the Nuremberg trials because in the end, he was the guy that Hitler said, I want you to do the Nero Doctrine, which was burn everything down in Germany. The German people have betrayed us, and the West is not going to get their hands on anything, so burn it all to the ground. And Albert Speer wanted to survive. He knew this was over. You know, it was 4 weeks from the end, and he was talking to Hitler, and he's like, I don't think that's a good idea. You'll do it. Yes, sir, I will. And then he didn't. He actually became a roadblock, and that's why he escaped the noose in the end. So that's what he's looking for, okay? Now, the question is, what are the odds that this is going to work? What if this doesn't work? What happens if there's nobody there to find? So let's start where we actually stand, because it has moved since the beginning of this thing. The bombs have already fallen. Ali Khamenei is dead now, killed in the opening strike back in February. His son, apparently he's alive. No real proof of that, but installed inside of 10 days by the Revolutionary Guard that wanted its own man in the chair before anybody could argue. There's now a signed memorandum, 60-day clock, oil moving through Hormuz again. And the thing that started all of this, the enriched uranium, is still in the ground. It's buried under sites that we cratered, but we did not empty it. The stockpile is the whole game. Everything else is scenery here. So the Speer that we need, the Albert Speer that we need, is now very, very specific. It's not a defector with a conscience. Whatever or whoever is inside that battered structure decides to hand over the uranium and let inspectors prove that it's gone is what we're looking for. Now, here's why it may not work. So far, we don't see a lot of wavering from China and Russia, the patrons of Iran. Putin has pledged unwavering support for the sun within days. Beijing warned everybody, hands off. However, that has decayed since the trip with Donald Trump. He made some real good moves with Beijing, and he is in talks with Moscow now. And I'm not sure how solid their support for Iran really is. But as long as Moscow and Beijing look like they're going to catch the regime if it falls, nobody on the inside of that regime is going to wake up and conclude that the ship is sinking. Because if he's got Beijing and he's got Moscow, it's not. It's not going anywhere. The man at the very top is the wrong man to reach for. A hardliner who lost his wife and his felon family in the strike. They made him the leader. He's promised vengeance. This is not hard arithmetic, okay? But the 60-day clock cuts both ways. It pressures the regime, but it also gives regime time to find its own wavering men and shoot them. That's the other thing that I think the Trump administration is looking for. Are they shooting anyone inside of the team? Now, I've been going over this the last week, and I've been doing a lot of thinking of this, and I'm like, wow, is this really the best card that we have? I mean, is this it? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Because that's all it. Alternatives... are worse.
All right, we can take it out. So do you get what he said? He's literally like, we need to find the worst person in Iran. Our victory depends on paying a defector, like paying a traitor, basically. Our one hope, because actually what he's laying out here is how we lost the war in Iran, that Russia and China are backing them up, that they have no reason to capitulate, that our murder of Khamenei actually resulted in more hardliners taking power. And he's like, our one hope is finding the biggest, scummiest dirtbag in Iran to be a traitor on our behalf. And it's like, is it time to look in the mirror? Is it, are we the baddies time yet? Is it time to look in the mirror and wonder, why do we have a skull on our helmet? Well, why are we the ones desperately looking for somebody of low enough character to betray his countrymen so that we can get victory? Are we maybe the bad guys in all of this? And even he kind of admits it where he's like, you know, he brings up Albert Speer and he brings up this, you know, circumstance where it's like he's ordered to do something outrageous and obscene and he can't do it. And out of conscience, his own conscience, he, you know, betrays his government because he's not going to kill his own people. And Glenn Beck puts that forward as an example and then is like, but we don't want somebody like that. We want somebody who's of low character, who will sell out their country for us. That's who we want on our team and on our side, because he recognizes that the Iranians are not doing insane things that, you know, you would have a moral, you know, repugnance for. Maybe we need an Israel. Maybe that's what we need. Maybe we need somebody in the Israeli government who actually has a conscience to, never mind. No, I realize the problem now. All right. We'll move on. We'll move on now. But, you know, like I said, I think that's a smart, like, I think Glenn Beck is, like, you know, connected to the people making these decisions. I think that is a very accurate reading of our current situation. I just think we're the bad guys. And I think when our only solution, other than just, you know, the other solution would just be to go home, right? We could just end the war at any point. It would be humiliating and Israel would pay a price, but we could at any point. We wouldn't suffer really at all. In fact, we could maybe make agreements and deals with Iran and they would be a better partner for us than Israel ever was, but not with the people we have currently in our government. That's never going to happen. So short of that, then yeah, the only option we have is to try to find somebody in Iran who will betray his own government. And it's like, this is terrible. This is just what have we become? What has Israel made America into? Just villains, just absolute unrepentant villains across the board. Now I'm thinking we should, let's do this. We'll get into voting here. We'll go to clip 24 first. Thomas Massey pointing out what we keep saying about the Republican Party and, you know, passing the SAVE Act and doing anything for the American people. Here's Thomas Massey on the real problem that Republicans face right now.
I think it's ironic that we control the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the White House, and we're yelling election fraud. I mean, we won all the damn elections, and we're in charge, and what are we doing with it? We're bankrupting the country, we're starting new wars, we're violating the Constitution, we're not cracking down on the fraud. The problem is not the elections. We won the damn elections. The problem is we're wasting our opportunity that the voters gave us, and the Republicans are going to pay for that in November. It'll be an absolute shellacking if they don't wake up.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's just outrageous. We control all three branches of government and can't get anything for ourselves. Instead, we're wasting all of that on Israel. I mean, all of it, literally. Trump plans potpourri primetime speech Thursday. Not sure what that means. I guess it means a collection of things. But he will apparently be talking about some of the investigations into voter fraud. He plans to discuss the resumed fighting with Iran, but also election integrity. The president wants to pass the Save America Act, a strict voter ID law that's been stalled in Congress. He may present findings from his intelligence officials about the administrative review of the 2020 election, which Trump won't admit he lost because it was stolen. Meanwhile, more than 200 FBI agents swarm Fulton County, Georgia, to investigate 2020 fraud. In what an FBI memo called a priority investigation, 260 FBI agents are surging to Fulton County, Georgia, to look into possible fraud regarding the 2020 election. The Department of Justice served a subpoena in April for the names and personal contact info for everyone in Fulton County who worked on the 2020 election. The request was slapped down by a judge last week, but that didn't stop the influx of FBI agents descending on Georgia from offices around the nation to look into more than 700 pieces of evidence, including documents, ballots, and tabulation machines, all of which were confiscated in a sweep last January. And let me remind you again, it is not even a debate. We know absolutely for certain, and again, without question, the election was stolen on the basis of nothing other than the fact they changed laws without permission, which is illegal, but they did it anyway. But that's in addition to all of the discrepancies that just prove endlessly what a fraud all of this was. Let's go now to clip number 44. This is State Senator Greg Dolezal talking about what happened in Georgia in 2020.
But we have heard repeatedly that everything was perfect with 2020. In fact, I think we probably at this point could trademark the most secure election in American history. What qualifications we use to measure that, I have no idea. But let's go back to what actually happened in 2020 if we're going to have the conversation. Drop boxes invented out of thin air, nowhere in Georgia law. Mobile voting units moving through Fulton County to 80% Democrat precincts, 81% Democrat precincts to be precise. Nowhere envisioned in Georgia law. 6.8 million absentee ballot request forms with a first class stamp sent to every registered voter in the state of Georgia. Nowhere envisioned in Georgia law. If you count the same ballots three times, in theory, you should get numbers that match. But that didn't happen either. Let's talk about the recount that happened. 3,930 double scanned ballots in Fulton County alone. Thousands of those have been confirmed by the state election board. Governor Kemp actually raised the concerns of the Moncla-Rossi report, and we now know that there were double scanned ballots. But even after the ballots were double scanned in Fulton County, did the numbers match on the second recount? Nope. They were still off by 850 ballots. Not one person here can answer the question of how that happened. And that is a legitimate question. We know that ballot images were deleted. We know that test ballots were included in the recount process, and we have that confirmed. But I want to take just a minute and talk about what the Democrats did in response to legitimate questions over the 2020 election. A former constituent of mine, Derek Somerville, former FBI agent, ran data analysis along with another gentleman named Mark Davis. And remember the 6.8 million absentee ballot request forms that were sent out? They had a first-class stamp. So that means if you filed a national change of address form, that was automatically forwarded to your new address. And they identified reasonable cause to question the validity of 39,141 of those ballots that were cast. They knew that 160 people had been registered to vote from a single UPS store. 2,138 people had been registered to vote from one church in Fulton County. 1,391 had been registered to vote from a shuttered 1,000 square foot building in Fulton County. And lest you think Fulton County has cleaned up their voter rolls, today, thousands of people are registered to vote in Fulton County at UPS stores, storage units, pack mails, homeless shelters that haven't been open for over 5 years. The Fulton County voter rolls have been and continue to be a mess. But when Derek Somerville and Mark Davis followed the law and filed objections to those voters, what did the Democrats do? Well, Stacey Abrams sued him in federal court, and they won. Not Stacey Abrams, but Somerville and Davis won. Judge Jones, not a Republican judge, ruled in their favor. What have we learned since then about those 39,000 voters? 12,000 of them have been removed from the voter rolls because Somerville and Davis were correct that they were no longer eligible to vote. 9,500 have updated their address to a new address outside of Fulton County, proving once again that Somerville and Davis were correct and those people were ineligible to vote. Ultimately, 84% of the votes of the eligibility that Somerville and Davis challenged were proven to have been invalid voters in the 2020 election. So let's stop this charade of the most perfect, most secure election in history. But more importantly, and I would agree with my colleagues on this, let's look forward to the future elections, and it's darn near past time for Fulton County to clean up their voter rolls.
Incredibly informative stuff. And yeah, I mean, the election was stolen. What else are we supposed to say about it? I mean, they did it right in front of all of us. They did it in abject betrayal of the laws as they stand. You can't just impose things like mail-in ballots. You have to go through the system. They didn't, but nobody stopped them. So I guess it's fine. As Ella Malding says on X, while Dems import tens of millions of tens of millions and elect communists, Republicans are calling Gen Z lazy and debating daylight savings time. When they cry about right-wing policies, right-wingers fold. This is why we lose. It's time to fight back.
Fight for our sovereignty, to fight to protect, again, what God gave us, which, I mean, our health is one of the biggest things. We're all, at this point, middle-aged. We're trying to have families. And I think with the transhumanist agenda, there's a little bit of a psyop afoot.
Where, oh, I've said that the other day when I had you guys coming on. I said, we're doing something about what we can take control of. Mm. And then the last few years, Joe Rogan, one time at dinner, goes, about 3 years ago, you're fat, you're your own enemy. He does that to guests. He's like Theo Von, too. Get off that Prozac, you idiot. And people were mad at him. That's tough love Joe does. And he's there with Sean Johnson, the Navy SEAL guy that I'd known for years, wasn't really friends. Sean goes, fine, I'll train you. I'll meet you every morning. And I said, all right, let's do it. And then I lost like 70 pounds, and I kind of halfway cut back and gained back 10. But now I'm back to where I was. I'm going to go even lower. But the whole point is that Joe goes, you know, you're your own worst enemy. You think the global's going to kill you. You're killing yourself. And so that's where Masterpiece comes in. That's where doing all this comes in. I mean, this is real, folks. Methylene blue works. Bovine colostrum works. This, you'll get Masterpiece.com. The Masterpiece is unbelievable.
We are at a crossroads with the survival of the human species. And the people that have all the resources and all have spelled that out very clearly to us. And the things that they are putting inside of our body to complete that mission. You got to get out. The fact of the matter is, zeolite, which is one of the main ingredients of Masterpiece, has been proven in all ways to remove every toxin that it's looked at grabbing. It performs. That's why it's called the Master Binder.
But yours is different.
It's completely different.
Because it doesn't just pull stuff. It brings in the key to sea minerals.
Yes, absolutely. So any way that you would actually test Masterpiece out, which would be like its pH, its molecular composition, its molecular ratio, if it's isotonic and whatnot, it is identical to blood plasma. You're talking about marine plasma, sea plasma, minerals. It is the same molecular composition of as your blood profile. And so why does that matter? Blood is life. When you are grabbing the problem with our bodies, with the toxins in there, which is disrupting how our bodies perform on every level, it's literally made our bodies mineral deficient. Toxins take the place of minerals. So when the Masterpiece is carrying in minerals, when it takes a toxin, it's giving the perfect minerals right there at that time. That's why everyone that looks at the testing, whether it's our hair tissue mineral analysis practitioners, our blood testers, which we've done three different independent third-party labs doing different blood testing, they've never seen results like
this. Yeah, so regular zeolite just pulls out bad stuff. It doesn't replace it. This is zeolite with a good thing, pulls out bad, it goes bloop, good.
Yeah. Our bodies are magical if you get the poisons out.
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95%+ lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of theAlexJonesStore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at theAlexJonesStore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Yes, we have been momentarily relieved from the attempt to merge Israeli and American militaries. The Senate voted against the NDAA 50-46, denying Israel a merger with the U.S. As Ian Malcolm 84 puts it on X, those 46 who voted in favor should probably face charges for treason, because, of course, this would be the NDAA that would include Section 219, which would be the Israeli merger into American military that has not been allowed to pass. That doesn't mean it's over by any means. And in fact, it could be as early as later today or tomorrow that this is retabled for consideration. So Senate Majority Leader John Thune switched his vote to a no vote at the end, which was a procedural move. This positions him as a member of the prevailing side to file and call up a motion to reconsider the cloture vote later. He can bring the same motion back quickly, often the next day or shortly after, or after short negotiations, when attendance timing or deals improve the chance of hitting those 60 votes. The Senate can try cloture again soon. No vote is guaranteed immediately, but the NDAA is one of these must-pass bills, so leadership will prioritize it. Cloture needs 60 votes to overcome a filibuster. It only got 50 votes, mostly Republican and a few others. Democrats largely opposed it over concerns like Iran-related provisions, spending, or the attached election measures, that is the Save America Act. Negotiation phase. Expect behind-the-scenes talks, possible amendment deals, or stripping controversial items like the U.S.-Israeli defense tech cooperation provisions in Section 1217 or similar. The House will consider its own version with related Israel tech language, so eventual conference committee reconciliation will iron out the differences. These bills almost always pass the NDAA, often with strong bipartisan support. After amendments and cloture fights, the Senate Armed Services Committee already advanced S-4784. That's the one with 1217, that merger aspect. In short, this was a procedural delay, tactical vote, not the end. The NDAA will likely return for another cloture attempt soon, get debated and amended and advanced, barring major surprises. So I'd say, you know, the focus now needs to be on finding Republicans or Democrats who can make the Israel merger aspect the key point of their opposition. Because if the NDAA has to pass, then you've got some leverage. Like, okay, it has to pass, then you have to make a deal because you have to pass it. And if we're talking about the SAVE Act and we're talking about all this other stuff, it gets a little bit complicated and it may get lost in the mix. But if the Israeli merger aspect is the one thing that Massey and others can stand up against, then that's the thing that'll have to be removed. So right now, you should be calling your senator, especially if they're a Republican, senators and congressmen, and let them know this is the deal breaker. And like I said before, if this passes, I'm voting Democrat. All right? Let them know that. And if enough people say it, you know, they might actually feel the pressure to move on it. And it needs to be about this. I mean, the SAVE Act, it's too late for the midterms. Like, the SAVE Act wouldn't actually impact the midterm. So I'm actually less concerned about the SAVE Act, even though it's obviously an important bill. It's not as important as stopping the merger of the Israeli and American militaries. It wouldn't, I don't believe it would affect the midterms at all if we passed the SAVE Act. I'm fairly certain it would take more than a couple months to get some of those things enacted. So, you know, and judges will decide. They'll go, well, you didn't give enough time for the local election people to, you know, apply the new rules. So we'll apply the SAVE Act in the next election. Don't worry about that. So I think it's too late for the SAVE Act. So if we can just focus on this, if it can be like, hey, we love everything in the NDAA, it's just Section 219, it's just Section 1217, it's just the merger with Israel, we get that out of the way, it passes through, no problem. But if that's going to be included, it's got to be a no vote, and we've got to pressure Republicans to stand with Thomas Massey for this no vote, because that is completely and utterly unacceptable. And while I totally understand it and have, you know, to some degree endorsed the idea of not voting Republican as a way to punish them, as a way to remind them that we're, that they cannot depend on us for our vote. And let me say, see if I can say this without giving away anything. I was talking to somebody who's very connected high up with a figure in Republican politics. And let's just say this person that my friend was talking to is the head of a major Republican organization, like the biggest one in the country. And no joke, and like verbatim, my friend was trying to talk to him about like, well, but aren't you concerned about this? And, you know, the constituents really, you know, prefer this. And the guy said to him, they'll vote for us no matter what. So like, you know, when you hear Nick Fuentes say, like, we have to withhold our vote. Otherwise, you know, they have no reason to do what we ask. And they just assume that they'll have our vote no matter what. So they never feel the need to actually give us anything. That's absolutely true. And sure, it's a secondhand source, but the person I was talking to was like, yeah, dude, they literally were like, the people will vote for us no matter what. What are they going to do? Vote for the Democrats? They have to vote for us. We can do whatever we want. That's actually how they feel. So I am absolutely in favor of not voting Republican, of making them regret that stance and reminding them that they do not own our vote. They have to actually do literally anything, like something. Like, it doesn't have to be everything, but it has to be one thing at least, and they haven't done a single thing. So we have to remind them of that. However, I've also always said I'm not exactly comfortable voting Democrat because of the policies that would directly impact my life and my family that are poisonous, like transgenderism. You can't just ignore that. As manufactured as the left and right divide is, it's real in certain cases, and that's one of them. So I'm not voting for Democrat unless this passes, unless Section 219 goes through, in which case I'm voting blue. I'm on the donkey team because, like I said, that may be the only way we could possibly undo Section 219. Because as much as I despise the Democrats in every other way, they do get things done and they do seem to oppose Israel to a greater degree now. So if this passes, we're going to need Democrats to undo it and then throw everybody in prison for treason that voted in favor of it. Maybe that's something we could all come together on as Americans, I would hope. So anyway, the NDAA has been paused. It's been slowed down for the time being, but it is far from over. So what I want to do now is talk about things, all things that seem somewhat disparate and yet are clearly aligned in their intention. You have things like this. I touched on this a little bit yesterday. New bipartisan bill seeks to outlaw criticism of Israel and Jewish power. This is the Jewish American Security Act, JASA, a piece of legislation that, if passed, would constitute one of the most sweeping attacks on the First Amendment in American history. The bill enjoys practically universal backing from Jewish nonprofits and Zionist activist groups. The new law presents four major demands. One, the appointment of a specialized anti-Semitism commissar to manage the Department of Education's campaign combating pro-Palestinian activism on college campuses. It also includes a $1 billion cash injection to secure Zionist nonprofits and Jewish houses of worship, mandatory state monitoring of online social media platforms in order to force them to censor anti-Semitic political speech on their platforms, and officially reorienting the mission of the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and National Counterintelligence and Security Centers as instruments for targeting critics of Jews and Israel as foreign enemy actors and domestic terrorists. So that's kind of horrifying, right? And it says, in addition to having an anti-Semitism coordinator micromanage this ongoing war on dissent, JASA calls for a public awareness campaign that will plaster propaganda posters in high-traffic public places such as cafeterias, gymnasium, or student centers, and digitally posting one or more high-traffic institution webpages such as webpage for Student Services Department, warning students and professors about the consequences of partaking in speech and activism that offends Jews or singles out Israel. So this is moving forward and very dangerous. And again, the point where it says they're reorienting the mission of the FBI, DHS, and National Counterintelligence Security Center as instruments for targeting critics of Jews in Israel as foreign enemy actors and domestic terrorists. Now, we've already seen sort of the groundwork for that being laid, which is, again, why I really have trouble believing the Trump administration when they're, you know, asking for billions of dollars for ICE, but they're not deporting anybody. It's like, what are they actually doing? Is this all part of a setup in which criticism of Israel or Jewish people will be made illegal and any outrage about that will be considered enemy military action? And are they not setting us up for a full-on coup of the American people and a takeover by a bunch of hostile foreigners? It seems that way to me. And all of this is what comes to my mind when I hear about the surveillance, I don't even know how to put it, because it's not just the flock cameras. At this moment, and simultaneously, all of these various surveillance bills are going forward, whether it's the chat control in Europe, where they get to read your chats before you send them, or, you know, anything happening here with financial surveillance, getting access to your bank account, using big tech to circumvent Fourth Amendment requirements for getting warrants and getting people's information by appealing directly to the server farms that our information is stored on. All over the world, all these surveillance programs are being put into place, and it feels like it's all in preparation for something like the JSA to pass, and then we're in real trouble. So let's go to clip 30 first. This is security researcher Ben Jordan revealing more than we knew before about what these flock cameras are capable of. Let's watch.
Flock license plate readers take a time-stamped photo of every vehicle that passes every camera. Police can search your historical travel information for 30 days.
This creates a searchable database of everyone, not just the suspects of crime.
Security researcher Ben Jordan.
And it's like if you were to build a graph of that sheet, you know, and plot it to a map, now it's as if you've had a GPS on your car for an entire month.
By your own publications, 700,000 crimes a year are solved with Flock?
Flock Safety Chief Communications Officer Josh Thomas.
Reported crimes in America, yeah. So there's a lot more that probably are being helped that aren't being reported. But yes, we have about 700,000 crimes that we are aware of that are being solved in part with evidence that's derived from a Flock safety device.
In order for that historical data to be of investigative value, you have to track every car for 30 days.
Again, I would challenge you on the word track. Tracking the whole of your movements is very different than knowing that you passed by one specific camera, 24 specific cameras. Those are different things.
And then the examples of tracking that vehicle from location to location to location.
But Flock's own webinars talk about its license plate reader's ability to track vehicles and people.
If you want to know how bad this Flock camera situation is, just watch the first 24 seconds of this video. Flock says its cameras don't track people. Its own training videos say otherwise. I watched this, my mouth literally dropped within 24 seconds. I'll play a little bit more for you, but just this first part is wild. Pay very close attention to when he says, this is a police department and these are all the other agencies and departments that it's sharing its information with. It's mind-blowing. It's literally crazy. Watch this.
In Boulder, Colorado, inside a small coffee shop.
The brighter areas are where the really high density of flock cameras are.
Will Freeman runs the largest police camera tracking system in the nation.
If you click on any of these police departments, it'll show you who they're sharing with. So the lines going outward are the agencies that can access their data directly.
It's called DFlock. The app shows where the cameras are and which way they're pointed. How many cameras have you mapped?
88,970 cameras at the moment.
Why did you want to do this?
The main reason is to show people how invasive this is.
So it's absolutely invasive, but it gets worse. Let's go to clip 43 here. This is from Next News on X at Next News. We'll just play a minute or so of it. The full thing's about 16 minutes. Police can search 30 days of your driving history through Flock's camera network. Let's watch.
Next News. Breaking news from the White House. People can search your historical travel information for 30 days. Stop right there. Read that again with me. 30 days. Every car, not a suspect, not a warrant. Every car passing a Flock camera gets logged, time-stamped, mapped, and stored like you work for the regime and owe them your whereabouts. That's the detail that blew the story wide open for me. Then you stack on Houston citizens cutting these things down, LAPD.
All right, so we can take it down. So again, these Flock cameras are abused rather often by police. They can be searched all over the place. They store your information and obviously can build a profile on you. And if there's enough of them, they can track you every second of the day, more or less. They can certainly get, you know, your location, where you're going, where you're headed, who you're meeting with, what you're up to. incredibly powerful surveillance tool that does not matter if you have a Soros DA. You understand that? It doesn't matter if you have all the cameras in the world. You catch the person, they're on camera committing the crime, but the Soros DA lets them out without bail and then decides they're insane and can't be held to account. Like, it doesn't matter. That's not why these are being built. If the concern was crime, there's about 10 million other things that are easier, cheaper, and more effective than flock cameras. That is not why the flock cameras are being built. It's why it's, sharing cat videos on Facebook is not why they're building these data centers. Stopping, you know, people falling asleep behind the wheel is not why they're putting cameras in every single car. This is to track and control the entire human population. It is, these are all the component parts of a giant surveillance prison machine being erected, and it will soon be turned on once fully operational. Not to mention, of course, the chat control and everything else. But now let's go to clip 45. Meta has launched a new Facebook that will, Meta has launched a new feature that will allow Facebook and Instagram to continually scan all of your information. And like, there's so many things like this. You know, any app you give access to your photos can and will scan it. But Meta is now doing this aggressively. Let's watch.
Facebook is now using AI to scan every single photo and video within your phone. I'm going to show you how to turn it off. This is terrifying. Not only are they scanning those photos and videos, but then they're uploading it to the cloud continuously. It's operating continuously in the background, scanning those photos to figure out the time of day, the location, the other people in your photos, that it can determine what it thinks you should post. I just uploaded a video about how to remove your data and data sharing in another video, and then this is the fresh hell we wake up to. Here's how you're going to turn it off. You're going into your account. At the top left-hand corner, there's going to be three lines. You're going to click that. That's going to open your settings, okay? Then you're going to scroll down to settings in privacy, and when that opens, you're going to click settings. You are scrolling down until you see camera roll sharing suggestions. There's going to be a little camera icon next to it. Click that. When it opens, turn that option off. We aren't done yet. After that, you're going to go back over to your settings and you're going to scroll and look for device settings. Once you find that, you're going to go into it and it's going to ask you if you want to open the device settings within your phone. Say yes, you do. You're going to go in there. You're going to turn off your microphone, or you're going to at least set it to ask every time so that it can't just access it whenever it wants. Same thing for location, same thing for photos and videos. Everything in there, you have to limit the access so that it cannot just go into your phone anytime. I love you so much. Please stay safe. Drink your water. I'll talk to you later.
So Facebook and Instagram both launched this feature. It's called Camera Roll Sharing Suggestions. It uses AI to scan your photos and your videos, and they say it's designed to suggest content for you to post based on time, location, people. Apparently, it's not enabled by default. It is a photo media permission, so it will ask you if you need to opt in. And what it does do is it scans all your photos and videos on device using AI models. But Meta can upload and process that data on their cloud server, so this is where the sketchiness comes in. It's not secretly scanning because you do have to give it in permission by opting in, but it does.
Okay, so again, just another example of more ways that the surveillance network is probing into everything that is you. Your photos, your movements, your communications, your network of friends and family. All of this, of course, will be tied to a digital ID that they're rolling out. So you've got the flock cameras, you've got the big tech surveillance, you've got digital ID, chat control in the EU. Every car is being mandated to have surveillance devices in it. And none of it is being used to fight crime. None of it is necessary to fight crime, which is where this video that was posted from Lindsey Graham, you know, after Lindsey Graham's death, clip number 31, I think this is what ties it all in together. Let's watch.
Lindsey Graham is now the talking point now that he's died, and his videos are circulating all over. But there's one video in particular which is really important. The Q post points to this conversation a number of times. And this is where they were swearing in Brett Kavanaugh for the Supreme Court, who was a threat to this entire snake mafia system. Well, he asks an interesting line of questions.
Talk about the law and war. Is there a body of law called the law of armed conflict?
There is such a body, Senator.
Is there a body of law that's called basic criminal law?
Yes, Senator.
Are there differences between those two bodies of law?
Yes, Senator.
From an American citizen's point of view, do your constitutional rights follow you? If you're in Paris, does the Fourth Amendment protect you as an American from your own government?
From your own government, yes.
Okay.
And it's for this exact post. Look, they are the unlawful enemy combatants. And it's talking about treasonous people against the United States that are citizens versus military law.
Isn't there also a long-settled law that... It goes back to the Eisenstrader case. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, Johnson versus Eisenstrader.
Right. That American citizens who collaborate with the enemy have considered enemy combatants.
They can be.
This bit. The enemy that collaborated with Nazi saboteurs.
Well, let's talk about can be. I think the...
Under Supreme Court precedent.
Right. Swimming, yeah. There's a Supreme Court decision that said... that American citizens who collaborated with Nazi saboteurs were tried by the military. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Infiltration from within, this Nazi snake. And if you listen here...
I think a couple of them were executed.
Yeah.
People executed for treason under military law. These are people that we would not know about. However, for the last 6 years, you do know about a lot of these people that have been treasonous, that have sold out their own country and now hiding in plain sight as a patriot. This is what this is explaining. Once you've committed treason, there's no turning back from that. But now we're playing catch up, so the people are waking up to it. Listen.
So if anybody doubts, there's a long-standing history in this country that your constitutional rights follow you wherever you go, but you don't have a constitutional right to turn on your own government, collaborate with the enemy of the nation. You'll be treated differently.
And then there's this post. Look, interesting line of questions. Normal, military law versus criminal law. This is so important because there's so many people that have been treasonous to America. So many gatekeepers that you follow are all part of this system where they sold out. They had a plan. This is why you're hearing about Iran so much. This all comes up to that head of the snake. Islam, Nazis, communists.
Right, forget this guy. This guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like a QAnon person, whatever. Do you actually understand? Can you see the important part of what's being laid out here? And I do think that 3 years ago, whenever that happened with Brett Kavanaugh, but 6 years ago or whenever it was, I think that was in line with everything else that we're seeing. This is laying the groundwork. We've heard talk about, you know, stripping citizenship from people so they can be deported. At the same time, we're hearing that, you know, opposing Israel is essentially treason. People are being deported for opposing Israel. What do you think happens if our militaries merge with Israel? Do you think anti-Israel sentiment will be treated as making you an enemy combatant? I see all these things coming down the pipe and aligning perfectly with each other. All the censorship, all of the surveillance, the digital ID, the safety for the Jewish American Safety Act, which says, I remind you, it will reorient the mission of the FBI, the DHS, National Counterterrorism Security Center, as instruments for targeting critics of Jews in Israel as foreign enemy actors and domestic terrorists. I think that's what they're setting up. I think they're setting it up to where they're merging the American and Israeli militaries so that anybody who opposes Israel will be treated as a domestic terrorist enemy combatant. They'll lose constitutional protections and they'll use ICE and the flock cameras and the surveillance network to round up anybody who opposes Israel's murderous, genocidal Greater Israel project here in America. Maybe I'm the paranoid one, but better safe than sorry, right? We better free ourselves before the jail cell door shuts once and for all.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Gee, Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life.
Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh. Look. Vodka. Potato hooch.
Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow! The methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.